There are some folks out there who say we will never really have a foolproof vaccine. Is that true? And what does that mean, doctor?
Not every vaccine is 100%, but if it's 90%, if it's 95%, if it's 99%, that's good enough to induce what we call herd mentality.
Tuesday, October 13th, 2020. No, the show's not over. Don't run away. I had apparently the wrong graphic in there to start the show out today, but herd mentality, not herd immunity, if you actually heard that correctly. This is something that I've played for you in the past, something that even Trump himself has slipped up on saying before. Herd immunity is what we're suddenly talking about a lot today, and whether or not it's even real anymore or whether we misunderstand it. But herd mentality seems to be the driving force behind all of it today. But we have quite a show that we're going to go through. Might be a little bit shorter than usual, but for those that know the show, it tends to be longer than most anyway. But I will try to get through this, hopefully, with a shorter period of time. But we're going to talk about today some important things, including some discussions of people being reinfected, supposedly, using PCR tests, of course. There's the big bombshell for you right off the bat. And the fact that multiple people around the world are being said to have come down with COVID-19 again. And we're going to get into why that is just as questionable as everything else we're hearing based on what it's coming from. We have more information in regard to whether or not this has actually ever been isolated. Something second, another great article from John Rappaport. The second time we've seen this, and we've been covering this from the very beginning. And yet people still pretend like that's fake news. We're going to go into that, talking about the censorship that's taking place simultaneously while that's happening around the discussion of being against vaccines. It's funny how that's coordinating something, all of our opinions in a very obvious way, but still open to discussion, though, right? That's what they want us to be thinking. And of course, Facebook is stepping in to control this as well as across most of social media. We're also going to be talking about a really alarming story about, but completely expected and in fact predicted on this show, that all of the contact tracing information is in fact being sold to people that you don't want it to be sold to. But no, we swore we wouldn't do that like we have every other time before this, and they just actually did it again. This is in the UK, and let's not pretend like that won't be happening here. We're also going to be talking about some issues with the vaccine discussion and to finish off some foreign policy that really is unnerving as always, some horrible things happening in Yemen. But one of the stories we're going to get into today to talk about across the board of all of this is in regard to civil immunity from COVID-19 lawsuits and how that, in my opinion, is being, they're taking the plight of the little man and using it to cover the big corporations. Nothing surprising there, right? Same things we've been talking about for a very long time, just focused on COVID-19 as it is today. But we're going to start off, as I said, with the discussion of being reinfected. That's what this is. This is what we're being told anyway, right? That now be afraid because you can get reinfected with whatever this is. Of course, because coming to the next discussion we'll get into, whether or not it's even been isolated, should make you question whether or not it's even actually there. But this is something that is at the point when everything is questionable. And I'm not saying that as an opinion. I'm not saying that as, you know, conspiracy theory. I'm saying that based off the information coming from the World Health Organization, from the CDC, from the NIH, from HHS, from all the people we're supposed to listen to, so we're told. The PCR test has a high rate of false positives. The number you can debate, but even the CDC and everybody else, the mainstream media, are admitting now grudgingly that this test they're using to push all the information they have as if it's absolute undeniable fact has a huge caveat next to it. So now when we're finding out that people are being told they're getting it twice, the obvious question should be, first, did they have it to begin with? And then second, was it a false positive the second time? Or even third, is any of it correct? And the fact that the point is that's a logical question based on the reality of the information. But what's interesting is they're acting like that's crazy and that you're actually putting people in danger by even suggesting that very easily verifiable point. Scientists confirm Nevada man was infected twice with coronavirus. A 25-year-old, it says, was infected twice with the coronavirus earlier this year. Scientists in Nevada have confirmed. So it's kind of retroactively pointing back to it. It says it is the first confirmed case of so-called reinfection with the virus in the U.S. and the fifth, which I found really interesting, confirmed reinfection case worldwide. Now, am I the only one that didn't hear about this? Maybe that's the case. I find it hard to believe. It's how constantly I'm digging through all this stuff. Five confirmed reinfections? And the U.S. media is only now touching on this? That seems a little interesting to me. But that's what they're saying. The cases underscore the importance of social distancing and wearing masks, even if you were previously infected with the virus. Well, there you go. Right? Of course, even if true or not, you can see where this is already going. Well, surprise, surprise. Even if we get a vaccine, even if we do everything right, even if everyone does everything they're supposed to, well, you still need to keep doing everything. Still need to social distance. You still need to wear a mask. And even if you've had it and you're not sick, or even if you don't, I mean, even if anything is the point, you list off the possible alternatives, the possible scenarios, the possible different variations of where we could be, and it still amounts to you must social distance, you must lock down, and you must wear a mask. What do you know? And this is just simply on top of everything else, the mountain of misinformation, the mountain of intentional deception, and all the other things we've been talking about. And they're standing on top of this inaccurate pile of information and saying, well, now we're getting even more from that. Now, on top of all this, so you can get it again, based on the same faulty test that we keep telling you that guarantees we're right in the beginning, even though it's clear that there's a whole open discussion to be had. Social distance, wear your masks. That's what it's coming down to. And we just come off a discussion about the masks yet again. Just all the science they just don't care to look at. Now, for those that are wondering what we're even talking about, take a minute and watch the shows from before. Watch the discussions we've had about masks over and over and over. Now, it says the two infections in the Nevada patient occurred about 6 weeks apart, according to a case study published Monday in the medical journal Lancet, which, of course, on this show, you know, we don't just report what we're being told. We look into it ourselves, right? Which you all should be doing as well at every possible turn. But Ryan, I don't have time for that. Yes, you do. That's just the reality. You have time for all kinds of things that you would otherwise do for yourself. Now, I'm not saying that we should always do everything, you know, research-wise or work or things instead of taking time for yourself. I, in fact, am adamant about taking time for yourself. But this right now, for how important we all think it is, the reality is you must absolutely, absolutely do these things for yourself. Even if you actually somehow don't have the time, you still need to do this for yourself, because that's how important this is right now. There's so much active misinformation from governments, officials, from every possible point in this, that it's important that you actually read these things for yourself. Genomic evidence for reinfection with SARS-CoV-2. Now, the reason that this is important, not because this study is going to be absolutely, you know, there's some bombshell. It's just still the point that you should be going through all these things. But the point it comes down to is PCR test, period. And what's interesting is that they ultimately don't say that in the beginning, because people won't be reading through the whole article, the whole study like you should be. Now, it says, the 25-year-old man who was a resident of Washoe County in the U.S. state of Nevada presented to health authorities on two occasions with symptoms of viral infection. Now, it says once at a community testing event in April, another one in the hospital, ending of May. Now, it says the nasopharyngeal swabs, we're talking about the testing swabs inside your nose, which ultimately amount to PCR testing, you'll see here. It says were obtained from the patient at each presentation and twice during follow-up. Nucleic acid amplification testing, which is another name for the PCR-style testing, was done to confirm SARS-CoV-2 infection. So right off the bat, and I will go further to show you that we're talking about PCR tests, but right off the bat, so what we're talking about is using a test that has been shown to have a reasonable amount of high of false positives, even according to the mainstream media. And yet now we're using that test to, quote, confirm whether or not someone has anything is the most ridiculous thing that we could possibly be saying. You're taking something that is guaranteed to have some level of misinformation or false results and using that to decide one of the most important things people are talking about right now. Does that not seem intentional? There's plenty of other ways that we could actually find this stuff out. You know, sort of the things we're going to get into in a moment that John Rappaport's been calling for from the very beginning, but they failed to do because they focus on the PCR test because it continues to reconfirm and insulate the lie that they've been creating with all of this. Now, under findings, it says the patient had two positive tests for SARS-CoV-2, the first on April 18th, 2020, the second on June 5th, 2020, separated by two negative tests done during follow-up. Again, these are all PCR tests. So any number of those could have been the opposite of what you're seeing. The second infection was symptomatically more severe than the first. Now, that's really important. This is a continual thing we keep seeing through this discussion in regard to specifically getting it twice. They keep saying, well, the important part is the second one was more severe, which perfectly aligns with the direction this is going. But you see, simultaneously, this seems to make the discussion of a vaccine almost moot. But you see, that's not where this is going. The discussion circles back around itself and says, no, the vaccine is still important. We still need that because that's what's going to, you know, maybe give you some kind of support, even though you might get it twice, even though this shows you in regard to, and understand, we're not taking what they're telling us at face value. We're running off of their narrative and using that, whether true or not, to point out the flaws in the other part of their narrative. So if the vaccine is still important, the idea of herd immunity, which is where this is going next in regard to the World Health Organization, is something we've talked about for a long time, which is suddenly now kind of getting warped into whatever they want it to be to apply to where we are. The second infection seems to imply something that's very unusual. Even Dr. Fauci himself in front of Congress said, and this is what I find so interesting about this, that it was clear about the fact that in almost every other case ever, and maybe even all cases as far as I could tell, if you get sick from something like this, you create antibodies and then you don't get sick again. This is the whole premise for the whole vaccine idea. This is the whole premise for all kinds. I mean, didn't we remember when we were kids, when we got chicken pox and it was just something you dealt with and you just said, oh, this is too bad. It's kind of itchy, but you go through it and then you won't get it again. Remember that? Remember, this doesn't exist anymore. Now we're all afraid of chicken pox too. You got to get your vaccine. The idea is that this whole second round scenario seems to suggest that that immunity discussion is just simply not there, which, again, Fauci said would be rare, even then when he was asked about COVID-19. So if it was so rare, why were we even considering that it might be possible? It's a question we should be asking. So all of that being said, the point is whether the question should be whether or not he was even sick to begin with, or whether or not he got sick a second time. And all of this stuff is just predicated on a test that is shown to be false. And a history showing you that this is something that is not usual. Now, it says under the interpretation, the patient was infected by SARS-CoV-2 on two separate occasions by a genetically distinct virus. Thus, previous exposure to SARS-CoV-2 might not guarantee total immunity in all cases, all individuals. So, see, it's kind of up in the air, right? Which then justifies circumstances where, say, vaccines don't work, or say certain things happen outside of what should, and they go, well, you know, it doesn't work all the time, which is kind of an easy way to go. So you have to get it, but it might not work, but still get it anyway, and still understand that we're going to force societal exclusion aspects on you despite all of that information. All individuals, it says, whether previously diagnosed with COVID-19 or not, should take identical precautions to avoid infection with SARS-CoV-2. Meaning, no matter, even if you get sick and then fight it off or whatever, you should still take every precaution seemingly for the rest of your life. The implications of reinfections could be relevant for vaccine development and application. Yeah. Now, I also find it interesting under the funding, it discussed Nevada IDEA Network of Biomedical Research. Well, isn't that great? So a group that seems to be standing on the precipice of one of the most financial, the largest financial windfalls that I could possibly imagine in regard to the technocratic revolution of our entire medical industry, a group that seems to be on that precipice, the biomedical research, the idea that, you know, Moncef Salawi and Matt Hepburn and all these different people that are clearly tied up with the Perfusa injectable nano platforms and all these biomedicine seemingly find. I find it interesting that a group that is involved in that research is funding studies that seem to make the case for why that research should be done. Seems kind of self-promoting or, you know, it's beneficial to you, right? So that's usually called a conflict of interest. But, you know, what do I know? Now, let's keep going. There was another part I wanted to show you. Swabs were transported to the Nevada State Public Health Laboratory. I find it interesting. So there's a whole period here, right, where they tested the person at this point, not knowing that this would end up happening. So I guess I'm assuming then did something with those swabs, tested them, did what they're going to do. And then weeks later, the guy was tested. And then same kind of thing happened. And then at some point, arguably they realized, wait a minute, this guy's getting tested twice. And then sent all of those things to a specific location. Now, it seems interesting when the swabs are, I mean, there's so many aspects within all of that that are just open for possible manipulation, possible mistakes. I mean, on and on and on. Weeks of time of testings and shipments. And, you know, it just seemed, I just wanted to point that out. Doesn't mean that we can necessarily prove that that caused something to happen, but it's important to think about. Then it says specimens were transported after that, by the way, once they were transported to Nevada State Public Health Laboratory. Then the specimens were transported on cold packs and stored by refrigeration for no longer than 72 hours before the nucleic acid extraction and subsequent real-time PCR test, RT-PCR, which is the full name of it. Now, this is the point. And it goes on to make a bunch more examples, and the PCR test is exactly what was used. So, long-winded point is that they used the PCR test to confirm whether or not this person had something, knowing that the PCR test has a high rate of false positives. Now, it says this is the second confirmed case of coronavirus reinfection in which the patient was sicker the second time. A patient in Ecuador also suffered a more serious case of COVID-19 the second time they were infected with the virus. All of these being tested with PCR tests, and seemingly nobody is asking the question of whether, hey, maybe they didn't even have it the second time. You can't even ask that question without being attacked, censored, and laughed at, even though everybody's aware of the false positive rate. How in the world does that make sense? It only makes sense in a world in which you are being controlled. That's it. That's like actually schizophrenic. That's psychotic. That's like a break in your, it's a schism in your brain. And we can be staring at the information and then go and talk about the information. They go, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. And then simultaneously have them make the other side of that point and be like, well, what about false negatives? It could be even more dangerous. And then attack you for saying the same point in reverse. God, it's ridiculous. But it says scientists are unsure why this might be. Oh, well, I feel better about that. It says, in theory, the body's immune system should make antibodies after the first infection that help it combat the virus more effectively if the person exposed to the same virus again. Yeah, in theory. You mean in theory like every other time before this. And suddenly, the time that it really matters and the time when even when this was in the beginning, people were going, well, don't jump the gun. We don't know whether or not it'll give you antibodies. Why would they even be asking that question if it's so if it's just something that hasn't happened? If in theory, this is the way it should work, why were they then setting that tone right in the beginning? Seems to suggest foreknowledge, does it not? It says that they're unsure why this might be. So this is just apparently a guess using a test that's inaccurate. Perfect. It says she stresses, one of the people involved, this is all very speculative because scientists still have very little information about the mechanisms at play. That's great. Doesn't that sound great that we're talking about, whatever mechanisms they may be talking about. You can apply that to the testing. You can apply that to COVID-19. The point is they're basically telling you, we don't know what the hell's going on. We have very little information about what's going on here, but we're controlling your lives and we're putting you in lockdown and we're forcing you to wear things that we don't have evidence to support. But yes, just sit in your homes because we don't know what's going on. It just makes me just like sick, unbelievable sometimes how ridiculous, how they can straight up tell you that when they're saying little information about mechanisms of play, that means it's not been isolated. They don't really know what we're staring at. And they're running on broad assumptions, but that's the decision that's been made. So nobody's willing to challenge that except for people outside of the circle. Only the most advanced hospital and laboratory facilities have the equipment and personnel to do the genome sequencing and analyze the results. As a result, most cases of reinfection are likely going undetected. Right. So this is something that is very rare and goes against general theory about what we understand. The doctors seem confused, but sure, let's just go ahead and assume that this means they're everywhere because we can't see it. You see the intellectual dishonesty from the mainstream media that just driving you into conclusion? Again, the point, the opposite of what we point out about people like Whitney Webb or different researchers and journalists, where they're not telling you what to think. And in fact, even some people criticizing them for that. I don't know how to put this information together. And that's a result of the government manipulating people. We actually have seen people say that. Like, why don't you tell us what this means? Because you're supposed to think for yourself. That's the point. And if we have to tell you what to think, you're not thinking for yourself. We have to train you again how to do what you've always supposed to do. The government has stolen that from you. It just really does kind of make your head spin sometimes. As a result, most cases of reinfection are likely going undetected. Be scared. It's everywhere, and we just can't tell. But if I say the opposite argument, which is just as logical, you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. Danny Altman, a professor of immunology at Imperial College London, says it seems that about 90% of people who have experienced a clear symptomatic infection have the antibodies to fight off another infection. Now, here's what's funny. First of all, before I even get to the last caveat, last little part there, he's straight up telling you, okay, everybody we're seeing, well, everybody, most people, are in fact having antibodies to fight this off infection. So why then do some people not, if that's what they're actually telling us? Wouldn't that first be like, wait a minute, if most people are, which seems to fall in line with the theory that we're all in line with, and this other thing that doesn't seem to make any sense, shouldn't we then go, wait a minute, maybe there's a problem here. Maybe the test is faulty. No, we won't do that. We'll just grasp onto the thing that goes against everything we know because we've already assumed the test can't be wrong. This is the kind of logic we're dealing with. He's telling you a clear symptomatic infection had the antibodies to fight off other infections, except for this weird scenario that just puts a whole, you know, complete unknown on the whole thing. So even if you get the test, and even if you get the vaccine, and even if you're not sick, and even if you're safe, that you still should wear your mask and go inside and listen to us because you're in danger for the rest of your life. Or, you know, until the next marker we lay down for you that will then be moved again and again and again and again. But again, the last part, which is the best, that, you know, you'll probably get these, the antibodies. And again, if it's just some probably, that means the same as nobody. Because they'll push that same 1% as we're all in danger if we don't keep that 1% safe. It's the same fallacy they use about everything else with vaccines before this. But it says most people will get these antibodies perhaps for about a year, though. Well, isn't that perfect? Because that's just in time for the next COVID cycle and a new COVID vaccine, just like the flu season and the new flu vaccine. That instead of using the vaccines like they tell us they work and allowing us to eventually gain herd immunity, which, by the way, Tedros on the World Health Organization, you'll see, make this argument in a moment, except basically going against what this says, but that if we get the vaccine for the flu, that it's supposed to give you antibodies and you're supposed to be able to, you know, have herd immunity. That's the whole argument. But then for some reason, every single year, we need to get more and more and more every year. The argument is if every year more people are getting it, which is what they're telling us, where's this herd immunity we keep hearing about that supposedly only happens with vaccines these days, except history shows us otherwise. The point of saying perhaps for about a year, leaving it unknown, is just to make sure that no matter what happens, that you have to get a vaccine. Even if we all get better, gotta get a vaccine because next year, well, it'll be gone by then. So we're told. Of course, that leaves, he says, 10% who don't. I guess, just randomly pulling this out of the air, about 90%. Like, this is something that they're openly telling you that they don't really fully understand. And then just go, well, you know, about 10% of people don't get it. Or do, or whatever. Like, just randomly giving you numbers because I'm in a white coat. Cool. Have sufficient antibodies to fight off a second infection, he wrote in an email to NPR. They have precisely the same risk as anyone out there, thus a small but significant number of reinfections. So the point being, none of it matters. You don't know. You could be one of those. You could be one of the people that won't get it. And even if you do get it, you have about a year anyway. So get the vaccine, put your mask on, stay inside. That's the point. The authors of the new study also raised the possibility that cases of people being infected multiple times have implications for the efficacy of a coronavirus vaccine. Uh-oh, are they actually going to say the vaccine shouldn't be taken because this might not make sense? Wait for it, since some people exposed to the virus may not be mounting sufficient immune responses to protect themselves from a second infection. Well, then we just shouldn't get the vaccine. Oh, wait a minute. But he says that such cases have no bearing on the efficacy of a future vaccine, because that totally makes sense. It's just, don't worry about that obvious issue with the herd immunity and the whole point of why we do this. Let me explain. He says the virus can deploy proteins to get in the way of the immune response, whereas a vaccine has none of those proteins. The good thing about a vaccine is that it can induce much better immunity, a much longer lasting immunity than the natural exposure to the virus. This is like every other lie they've ever told you. That, you know, instead of eating a natural diet of organic foods, that you eat the things that they use from those foods or the medicines they make from natural medicines, those are better for you. The reality that we're slowly coming to see is that's a complete lie, and it always has been. Sort of like the way that you're finding most of these, you know, rich and famous athletes and stars are going out of their way to go to very expensive or natural treatments in other places of the world because it's better. Because they're finding out that these things actually work without all the crazy side effects. So what they're literally telling you there And the only reason they make this paragraph right here is to make it seem like, well, you know, let's pretend to argue that the vaccine won't be necessary and give you an illogical reason for why that statement should be made, but then swing back around and just say, but just take the vaccine anyway. Because it's better at creating the thing that humanity has been creating since its inception. And then also realize that that's completely contrasted and countered by the year after year after year after year of useless vaccines for flu and everything else that we keep getting and keep out. Yeah, but just go with what he says. That's the point. Oh, and that's not the only case. Apparently a Dutch woman dies after being reinfected with COVID-19. So we're told. The Financial Times reported, citing a scientific paper published in the journal Clinical Infectious Disease, that an 89-year-old Dutch woman has become the first person reinfected with COVID-19 to succumb to the virus. According to the paper, the patient first arrived at a hospital in the Netherlands complaining of fatigue. She tested positive. So PCR test, which could have been false, and was later discharged. Okay, so maybe she wasn't sick at all. Maybe she got a false positive, which can happen upwards of 90% of the time because of any number of other things she was dealing with. Then it goes on to say, but 59 days later, she returned to the hospital with even more serious conditions and tested positive for COVID-19. She died shortly after. Again, so maybe none of that's the case. Maybe she didn't test positive any of those times, and it was always false positives, and she was an elderly sick person that had a lot of other things going on. They won't even report to you whether she had other comorbidities, at least not here. I'm not saying I know any of this stuff for sure, but the point is neither do they. And they will never even come close to admitting that there's a caveat on all of the things that they're saying here. Why is that? I think because it's very clear that they have an agenda here at some level. Now, which brings us to the real point of why this stuff is even being discussed. So they're telling you people are being reinfected. They're telling you that this is all coming down right now. Well, John Rappaport just put out a great article. He puts out in his tweet, yet another case of the missing virus. They lied and locked down the world. Another key architect of the COVID PCR test had no coronavirus. The whole fake COVID house is falling down. We know exactly what we're doing, but we have no virus available. Yet another case of the missing virus. Now, this is interesting because we've already shown you this, by the way. I believe it was, let's see, here. So we've shown you this one already. Now, we actually talked about this right when this first was shown. John Rappaport recently did an article on it, which got a lot more attention, which is awesome. But remember that this has been around for a while. Now, this is in this document right here, CDC 2019 novel coronavirus. Now, they've already come up with their excuse for what this means, right? They always have that way of explaining the obvious sentence and giving you some kind of equivocation for, well, here's what it actually means. And you conspiracy theorists, you don't understand science, right? But here's what it says. Since no quantified virus isolates of the 2019 novel coronavirus are currently available, and goes on to discuss more. The point is that they did not have quantified virus isolates, period. And of course, people, well, it's because they didn't have access to and all these different excuses. Fine. By the way, that's completely false. But let's just assume for discussion that maybe they were right and maybe at this time there's a reason for this excuse. Well, that doesn't explain where we are now. As John says, he's been exposing the fact that the CDC in July of this year admitted in that document I just showed you that they didn't have a SARS-CoV-2 virus. It wasn't available, which means, as he says, they couldn't obtain an isolated specimen of the virus. There's only one reason why, he says. The virus hadn't been isolated, and that means no one has proved it exists. Now, understand, we've gone over this in depth before. We're talking about Koch's postulates, right? These are things that must be met in order to prove that something, this is the gold standard, and it always was the gold standard right up until COVID-19, and they suddenly changed that. And it's not before it all started. And when they weren't able to isolate it with Koch's postulates, they just went another direction and chose something else. That's not okay. That's not how it works. Honest scientists around the world are standing up and saying, well, that's not okay. And that means you haven't isolated this. Just because the inner circle of the elitists all agree that they can change it to meet the thing they want to prove doesn't mean they can do that, right? This is something that's existed long before them. And that's a simple fact that's easy to look up. And it has not met Koch's postulates. So basically what it means is they scraped, as I keep pointing out, some material from some lungs in China when this was first noticed Doesn't mean it started there, by the way. This means it was first noticed there. Again, there's examples of this happening all around the world well before it was seen first in China, but no one wants to talk about that. I've talked about it many times, but they scraped the material from the lungs in China, and ever since then, this is what has been pointed to. So you test positive for whatever that is. Apparently, that's enough. But also then understand that even then, you've got a PCR test that can give you a false positive, even based on whatever that material is. So to realize how incredibly uncertain that is. And they're telling you right in this document that they have not isolated it, or they don't have access to it at the very least. But it says he discovered another document, and I hadn't seen this until John reported on it. This one apparently formed the basis for the first PCR test aimed at detecting the COVID virus all over the world, which is way more relevant for me. Because first of all, this we're talking about, I just seen the date, 7/13, which is, you know, I mean, it's in the middle, but this is talking about specifically basically setting the metrics and information for the PCR test in regard to COVID-19, which means that they were well aware when they were doing so that they were supposed to have an isolated version. That's how you do that. But they didn't. And we'll show you why. Now, the study itself, which we'll get into as well, I'm actually going to go over what John says, and then we'll go back through the study and just briefly go over it again. But the study reads, it says, quote, we aimed to develop and deploy robust diagnostic methodology for use in public health laboratory settings without having virus material available. Now, in fact, let's just read it from here first so you can see these things. Right on the background, 2020, January. The ongoing outbreak of the recently emerged novel coronavirus poses a challenge for public health laboratories as virus isolates are unavailable. Unavailable. At a time when they're using this to make a test, how does that even make sense? And as he says, the translation, we want to develop a test to detect the new COVID virus without having the virus. That's what that means. Says we aim to develop and deploy robust diagnostic methodology for use in public health laboratory settings without having virus material available. Hey, there's no misunderstanding what this is telling you. Again, this is on the National Library of Science, of Medicine, excuse me, National Library of Medicine, National Institute of Health, without having virus material available. Okay. But this is conspiracy theory, though, right? I mean, it's becoming almost it's almost entertaining for me how we've almost, I mean, this is, everything we seem to talk about these days is straight off the official sources they tell us we're supposed to be listening to, which, as you know, does not mean that we're blindly listening to these sources. I, in fact, think most of them are questionable. This is just a portal for people to put these on here. But nonetheless, there's a lot of sources out there, such as the CDC and the World Health Organization, that we're showing you information from, and still we're being called conspiracy theorists. I mean, it is really incredible. And there's a point I'm going to make about that down later in the show in regard to how, interestingly, you know, the whole anti-vaxxer discussion has totally flipped on its ear now. Where people are saying, well, I don't trust Trump's vaccine. Uh-oh, are you an anti-vaxxer now? Right? You see how dumb that argument is? We'll get to it in a minute. It's obviously an intellectual, it's a fallacy. It's like saying, oh, what a conspiracy theory. That is the most ignorant argument. It's lazy. But as John points out, or actually, that was the next one. The next one he reads, we present a validated diagnostic under methods, a validated diagnostic workflow for 2019 novel coronavirus is designed relying on close genetic relatedness of 2019 novel coronavirus with SARS coronavirus, making use of synthetic nucleic acid technology. And as he says, translation, we have developed a diagnostic test to detect the new coronavirus or new COVID virus. We assume this new virus is closely related to the older coronavirus. We assume we know how it is related. We assume because we don't have the new COVID virus. Therefore, all our assumptions are made out of nothing. Actually, we have no proof there is a new coronavirus. Pretty astounding. Right there, black and white, guys. No standard against which to compare the reliability of the test. This is the point we keep making. And this is the interesting analogy somebody made. With most of any test, you have some kind of a baseline, a variable, but it's something to verify it. Right? So you could, with any kind of a test, right? So the example is with a pregnancy test, let's say. The ultimate test of its validity would be whether or not the woman gets pregnant. Right? At the end of the day, that's very clear. You can reliably tell one way or another whether it was accurate. But what they're telling you here, and what they're doing with the PCR test in regard to COVID-19, is the equivalent of testing the pregnancy test with the pregnancy test. And yeah, you agree that doesn't make any sense, but that's what's happening here. There's no standard against which to compare the reliability of the PCR test. We're just taking the word of officials. Isn't that funny how it aligns with everything else that's been happening in our world? That's what's happening. Trust us. Intelligence shows. Trust us. That test says you're sick. Trust us. It's all of it. It's all of it across the board. The virus isn't there, he says. It has not been isolated. It has not been separated from its other material. Now, that's the point. That's what has to happen, right? When that material was scraped from the lungs, you just have a bunch of material. Some of it could be virus. Some of it could be any number of things from the body. And so what an actual honest scientist would do in meeting Koch's postulates would be to separate that, isolate the specific virus from everything else that's going on there. And when you effectively meet Koch's postulates in doing so, then you can say, yes, we have proven that this is what is getting you sick. This is the virus. But they haven't done that. He says, and yet the test which these authors have developed is launched all over the world to detect that virus, to form the basis for counting COVID case numbers, and ultimately to justify all the lockdowns which have crashed the global economy and destroyed millions upon millions of lives. A great deal of confusion has been created, he says, because scientists are now talking about the new virus as if they understand its structure and sequence. No. They've interpreted that genetic structure. And once they've made their interpretations, they gibber about what it means. This is actually a great analogy. He said, it's like this. Picture a very thick steel vault. He claims that there is a pile of treasure inside. A man, somebody standing in front of the steel vault. Lots of treasure inside this steel vault, he tells you. But no one can open the door. No one can look inside the vault. He says people show up, all sorts of fancy instruments. They make indirect measurements and then issue very authoritative sounding statements about what's inside the vault. Understand, well, no one has yet seen inside, but no one can get inside of that thing. This is a magic vault, he says. You can't drill into it. You can't blow it up. But in its vicinity, all sorts of hustlers have gathered and they pontificate. They bloviate. They wave their credentials in the air. Reporters interview them. Governments follow their recommendations. And that's all it is. It's that kind of party. What a great analogy, too. When you really picture of course, these people want to know, I'm the expert. I can tell you based on my information what's going on in there. That's what's happening right now. And of course, none of them are going to admit that they were wrong. And most of them are probably banking on the fact that they may actually end up being right anyway. It says, and that's all it is. Saying you have isolated a virus doesn't mean that you have. It may mean you think that you have the virus inside a mess of material, which contains many different genetic sequences and all manner of cellular debris and who knows what. Some scientists will claim a lesser amount of mess entitles them to state they have isolated the virus. Other scientists will claim that because they can grow in a dish what they believe is the virus, this is proof a virus exists, but they're all wrong. And this is the idea. Once you remove the barrier of Koch's postulates and give them the line, the gold standard, well, then it's just all up in the air. As the late independent researcher David Crowe has written, quote, and the word isolation has been so debased by virologists, it means nothing. Adding impure materials to a cell culture and seeing cell death is as isolation. And this is other researchers are speaking out about this and saying they just bastardized the word to where it means nothing. John says in his last article, he described exactly the kind of experiment that should have been initiated 5 minutes after scientists claimed that there was an outbreak in China. And this is what should have happened if they had any intention of actually finding out what was going on. And that includes China and the United States. It's a large-scale study involving humans who were diagnosed with the epidemic illness. Tissue samples would be taken from 500 of those patients and correctly analyzed via electron microscope photography. But studies of that dimension and precision don't interest scientists who live in the lab. Such studies are too dangerous. There is every chance that in the harsh glare of sunlight, all their warnings about a vast pandemic will be shown to be false. False and ridiculous, absurd and insane. These experts don't want to take that chance. Now, of course, I'm not going to suggest that every possible person in this field is all, you know, exactly what he's outlining there. Truly, I think it's probably pretty damn close. But that's my opinion. But nonetheless, the point is there are people that are controlling this direction. I think very much so. He says, for them, there is no such thing as just simply no virus. There's always a virus. Empty out the house of modern virology, he says, open the windows and let the fresh air in, and then we'll be living in a far better world. I have to completely agree with that. So now we've got two examples of the CDC straight up telling you we don't have an isolated virus. Studies saying we don't have an isolated virus without having virus material available. But sure, let's continue pretending like we know what this thing is because the media says so. Oh, gosh darn it. Very frustrated I just did that. Okay, good. Never mind. I thought I had highlights in this, but I don't. So the point being, moving on to the next discussion here. So all of this is around the discussion of, you know, herd immunity, whether or not you have antibodies. They're all the same discussion here. The PCR testing, whether or not you're sick to begin with, and now finding, claiming that you're getting sick again, which challenges the idea that antibodies in general, in this case, in regard to COVID-19, make any difference, which challenges the idea and necessity of a vaccine. But here is the World Health Organization, Tedros, saying, herd immunity approach to a pandemic is actually unethical. I mean, and this is ridiculous. I mean, this is straight up absurd. I mean, as Whitney pointed out before, we were talking about this, and this is something I was similarly saying about Trump recently, is that we're seeing this absurd, the way that they push out information that they know is contradictory in order to make people kind of real. And just, you don't know who to trust. You don't know what to do. So you basically just end up sitting back and trusting the authority figures. And in this case, the point she was making is that if they want you to trust the World Health Organization guidelines at all costs, despite them continually being shown to be wrong. So the point is they want you to just go, okay, fine. If it's so ridiculous, you don't know. You just sit back and go, fine. The World Health Organization knows. And the reality is you don't really think that. You're just so fed up with being cool. You have no idea who to even listen to anymore. It's apathy. They're creating apathy. So now we're in a situation where they're coming out and saying the very thing, the very premise on why we're making this vaccine, but in regard to doing it naturally, you know, which has been happening for centuries before, you know, for all of humanity since before they created this thing called a vaccine, but now that's unethical, apparently. Now he says, now, you know what? I did have this open. Gosh darn it. I'm pretty sure I had a whole bunch of things say, oh, there we go. Yeah, I guess I did. Son of a gun. Well, I'll read through some of this because the point is, here's what I want to read you. That's right. I want to read what he says here. It says the World Health Organization head has warned against deliberately allowing coronavirus to spread in the hopes of achieving so-called herd immunity, saying it's unethical. Of course, this is challenging what Sweden and different groups and I'm blanking on the name, it was the Frontier or something, I believe. One of the recent push that's coming out of people call it the declaration, but there is a term they're using for the new path they want. And ultimately it applies to this idea, allowing people to go back about their lives like any other situation of all time before this and allow the natural course to take its course. And this is while we know the numbers are not even close to what they're telling us it is. So there's really not even a reason to challenge this, but they are, because obviously there's more going on here than we're seeing. He says herd immunity. And this is what's incredible to me. This is one of the leading health officials in the world. And he's straight up with a straight face telling you herd immunity is a concept used for vaccination in which a population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of a vaccination is reached. Oh, wow. You know what? I'm wondering if this article has been changed. And that's why it was different when I came back. He says, for instance, for measles, it's estimated that 95% of the population is vaccinated. The remaining 5% will also be protected from the spread of the virus, which, by the way, doesn't seem to be happening anyway. With flu, with polio, with any of these things. It says herd immunity is achieved by protecting people from a virus. not by exposing them to it. And this, and he literally says, never in the history of public health has herd immunity been used as a strategy for responding to an outbreak, let alone a pandemic. So here's what simply Wikipedia has to say. Herd immunity is a form of indirect protection from infectious disease that occurs when a sufficient percentage of population has become immune to an infection, whether through vaccination or previous infections, thereby reducing the likelihood of infection for individuals who lack immunity. Okay, let's go back to what he said. Herd immunity is achieved by protecting people from a virus, not exposing them to it. I mean, it literally says the opposite. And by the way, how does that explain the centuries and centuries of natural herd immunity that took place from viruses and whatever else you want to call it or whatever you think it is passing its way through the population? Do you realize the reason he's saying this is to play on the ignorance of most people and trying to rewrite reality in real time and help you think that no, this is something that we created because we're the best and we're making these things happen. Vaccines were created so we could give you herd immunity. That's how we're fighting for you. No, they're taking something that naturally occurred and then pumping you full of things that have been shown to cause lots and lots of problems. And then most of the time, not even actually achieving what they say it does. I would love for someone to challenge any of that. Because all of that is very easy to verify. I didn't say any of it is absolutes, because sure, sometimes things work for some people sometimes. But the point is, in every single case, every vaccine of all time has hurt people. That is a simple fact. Billions and billions of dollars have been paid out in the vaccine court. And right now we're heading in a direction of another vaccine being completely removed from immunity, and as well as pretty much everything else. So how can they argue that this is not how it works? That herd immunity is because of a vaccine? That vaccines that we give to people are why you get herd immunity? And to do it the other way, you know, the way we've been doing it all the way up until now, is unethical suddenly. It's because they're trying to, as again Whitney pointed out, they're just trying to challenge the information. So you get confused and you don't even know what to listen to. And at the same time, rewriting your reality for you. They're reimagining everything. They already told you this is happening. The Great Reset, right? And it's based on this biosecurity state. And they need you to believe that these things that are coming out that we're inherently skeptical about are the end-all, be-all, best thing you can have. Even if it doesn't actually help and you have to get it again next year. But just go ahead and take it anyway. This is, I mean, it's almost malfeasance, right? I mean, this, I would argue that him saying something like this, he should lose his job. I mean, that's literally counter to, I mean, look, let's just put it this way. Even if he's correct in saying this, that should then mean an immediate wild overhaul of everything we think we've known and discussed and used up until now, but it won't. It's just staggering to me. Here he is saying the same thing, but going a little bit further, and this video will be in the show notes. Herd immunity achieved by protecting people from a virus. Oh, just by the way, say, I just had the video in here. So you guys, yeah, you guys can listen to the video for yourselves. I'll have it in the show notes. It's about, I mean, the idea that not being introduced to a virus is the way to achieve herd immunity is just illogical. But the argument, what he's trying to make there by not, but in a very deceptive way, is saying that the vaccine is how you're supposed to reach it. But he knows that's not correct. And as Rocco points out, a constitutional lawyer. So if there's no such thing as herd immunity, and I argue at least in the way that Tedros is making it sound, why have vaccines? So if, and think about the idea of this, if you can't reach herd immunity, as he's basically saying, by naturally being introduced to a virus and getting the immunity or the antibodies, then what does a vaccine do? You see, they don't want you to think too hard into what they're saying. They want you to be scared. They want you to reel and just listen and take what they're saying. Because that's the world they're building. Censorship, manipulation, right on its face. He says, so we were right. This is strictly about vaccines. Obviously, that's the point. Come hell or high water, science, medicine, logic, or rationality. Yep. Vaccines at all costs. And that includes Trump, by the way. Despite the willful ignorance of all the people that don't want to see what he's actually saying. It's coming your way. Now, as we're talking about all this stuff, about the vaccines and about the manipulations of it and the lies about even the information we've been told is the fact up until now, It's weird how, and very on the nose, that suddenly, simultaneously, when they're like challenging the entire base of information about what we understand about vaccines, they're just going, oh, well, we're going to censor the any discussion about anti-vaccines. But in this case, specifically, just not, we're going to ban any kind of ads discussing anti-vaccine. Now, of course, anti-vaccine is basically everything except blind faith in vaccines work all the time, every time. That's what it boils down to, which is, again, simply ignorant. I mean, that is intellectually dishonest to pretend that every person possible that believes that there may be a reason to just be skeptical about vaccines, or basically anybody other than someone who wholeheartedly buys into everything they say, is anti-vaccine. Despite the vaccine court, despite people being injured by them, despite any number of rational discussions to be had. Which shows you that they're controlling the discussion. Now, this is very new. This is actually from 2019, showing you where they're saying, well, we'll crack down on anti-vaccine content, but we won't remove it. Not to take the post down entirely. So basically, even back in 2019, they're telling you, well, we're going to just make sure that nobody sees these things. We're going to quietly step on the stuff that we don't like while promoting the discussion we do agree with. But we're not deciding for you, right? It's just ridiculous to pretend like that's not obviously controlling speech. But the point is, this was going on since 2019. Clark County, Washington, combats an ongoing measles outbreak. Remember that discussion? Facebook announced, what about herd immunity though? Facebook announced Thursday that it's diminishing the reach of anti-vaccine information. So it's straight up telling you all the way back in March of 2019 that they're stepping on the result. They're making sure the information about that, valid or otherwise, or the fact that you have a right to say it, doesn't matter. We're going to make sure people can't see it. It will no longer allow to be promoted through ads. The company also said it was exploring ways to give users more context about vaccines from expert organizations. You mean like the CDC or the World Health Organization? Right, the CDC, who literally sells vaccines and then is supposed to make sure they're safe and make sure that they're... I mean, it's the most glaring conflict of interest of all time. A company who literally profits at the sale of the thing that they're supposed to make sure is safe is dumb. But you see, but we don't talk about that when it's in the good guy government, right? Oh, these are the good guys. How dare you suggest that we would do something wrong? And then they go and do things wrong over and over and over and over. And then they come back again and go, how dare you suggest I would do something wrong? It's because all the people in the two-party paradigm refuse to admit that their side is doing something wrong. And so all of us screaming about all of them get lost in the noise. Facebook, along with YouTube and Amazon, have faced criticism from journalists and lawmakers in recent weeks for allowing vaccine misinformation. So as usual, there are people that are actually reaching out to these outlets and saying, you can't allow this thing I disagree with, and they do it. Oh, because journalists and lawmakers. So now journalists and lawmakers are controlling what you're allowed to say on social media? Yes. And these aren't really journalists if they're doing that to begin with. But here's what's most alarming. And remember, this is back in 2019 still. Adam Schiff, a Democrat representative from California, sent letters to the CEOs of YouTube and Facebook demanding they answer questions about the spread of anti-vaccine information, which they're deciding what falls in that category. Again, anything that doesn't blindly follow the narrative. He followed up with a similar letter to Amazon. So Adam Schiff and government in general, it doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican, your government reaches out to these platforms and tells them what they're allowed to put on the platform, or at least pressures them to remove things, and they oblige. So the moment that happens, these are government censors, period. These are not private companies. These are companies censoring based on government mandate. That's what's happening, which means they're censoring, and you have the right to take issue with that. Redress of grievances. But you see, our government's been broken, so those things don't exist anymore. But moving forward, this is also in 2019, but 1 month later, this person points out, Facebook has officially responded to me and has shown commitment for polio eradication by agreeing to curb, restrict, and remove anti-vax content from Facebook. Right? So because of this thing that happens, we're going to literally censor speech about that discussion that doesn't go along with what we think. You realize how chilling that is. And this was just testing the waters for where we are now. Soon we will be sharing names of pages, profiles that spread hate against polio program. Clearly this guy's an English speaking local. I mean, it's so dumb how obvious manipulation is happening here. But continuing forward, this is only 1 month ago, September. Mark Zuckerberg says Facebook won't remove anti-vaccine posts despite COVID concerns. But then he does. A ban on anti-vaccination ads. Now, remember, first of all, We already happening. We're back in March of 2019. He's already suppressing the flow of these information. So now on top of basically making sure that any post about the things they don't agree with just doesn't get seen, well, now they're also making sure that you can't promote or push put up ads on anything that you want to put out in regard to what they label anti-vaccination. It says, on Tuesday, Facebook announced a new policy banning ads that discourage the use of vaccines. I mean, it's just, of course, this is such a political talking point that people just go, yes, of course, because that's dangerous. But what, I mean, so if I wanted to make a video discouraging the use of penicillin, would you censor me then? Why is it different? If I wanted to make a video discouraging the use of some unknown substance that, you know, some new secret medicine that hasn't been verified by the FDA, well, they'll sure as hell allow that. What's the difference? The difference is they have set the parameters. They're telling you you can't talk about vaccines. They're telling you. And why would that be? Because it's so incredibly dangerous to not do it? Well, the human race sure as hell seemed to survive until now. So what are we talking about? It's because there's a reason they don't want you challenging this narrative. And I would say that reason is probably COVID-19, because it's been building to here right now. Timed to the beginning of flu season, the new policy is also aimed at the ongoing proliferation of anti-vaccine groups on Facebook. You can't collect and talk about it either. And growing skepticism about forthcoming vaccines of COVID-19. And aha, there is your point. That's what it all comes down to. Despite the obvious reasons to be concerned about it. And I mean, that regardless of your opinions about vaccines in general, there is every possible reason to be concerned about this vaccine, from the lack of safety testing, from the lack of testing on humans, or I mean on animals, from the lack of actually ever creating this successfully before, on the idea that the technology they're using has never been done. I mean, everything about this is dangerous and alarming. And they're using the justification of vaccines at a broad discussion to censor you talking about this one. That is the point. They're using the whole thing to censor this one topic, because that is what's happening. That's what it's all about. That's my opinion. And I think it's very clear how it's been leading this direction. But you'll see them already doing this. They're already stepping further back and using other broader things to say, well, we're going to just take care of this whole big topic because COVID-19. He says, our goal is to help messages about the safety and efficacy of vaccines reach a broad group of people. Okay, so you already see the bias right there. So they're telling you. And understand, we're talking about something that has yet to be shown to be efficacious and safe. And then saying, but our goal is to make sure that's the message of that gets out to people. Even though we haven't proved that yet. But we're going to keep telling you it's safe, it's efficacious, it's safe, it's efficacious, because that's what they're supposed to do. But then simultaneously, while prohibiting ads with, quote, misinformation that could harm public health efforts. And of course, that means anyone that challenges the safety and efficacy of the COVID-19 vaccine, despite the fact that it's yet to be proven to be safe and efficacious. Make sense? You follow? It says, we don't want these ads on our platform. You can't promote your ads that go against what we think we should be doing. But we're not a publisher. We're allowing people to do what they want. It's just insulting to our intelligence. The anti-vaccination groups themselves will continue to be allowed on the platform. Organic or unpaid content discouraging vaccination is still permitted. Well, thank you for allowing us to say things that we think per Facebook's platform rules. Guys, this is where we should be at the point where we're saying boycott Facebook, boycott YouTube, right? We literally need to start this happening. Alongside the new ad policies, Facebook will actively promote vaccination through a public information campaign. So not only are they going to control who says what on the platform and allow some people to make an argument about vaccination while allowing the other ones not to, but then they're going to assert their opinion in there, and they're going to actively promote the thing they agree with while letting you not talk about your opinion of it. Does that seem fair? But we're not a publisher, though. And directs users to vaccinate sites using its preventative health tool. So we're going to censor one side of the argument while promoting one side of the argument. That sounds fair. It's part of a string of recent crackdowns from Facebook. On Monday, the platform banned Holocaust deniers' content after years of mounting criticism. The previous week, the platform strengthened its ban against QAnon-linked content and announced platforms for complete blackout on U.S. political ads in the following days. I mean, the absurdity of any of this stuff, right? I mean, regardless of your opinion on the Holocaust, the fact that somebody can't go online and express their opinions about something that happened in history is just ridiculous. if I want to go on and pretend and argue that I don't think that Christopher Columbus actually existed, or I want to argue that any number of things in history are actually misrepresented, is that censored? Well, no, it's because we've chosen the Holocaust to be a sensitive topic that you can't talk about. I mean, there is any number of examples of historic events like this where that are very contentious, where a lot of people died, and none of those are censorable, but this one is. That's a choice being made, and it doesn't matter how you think about the topic. The choice is being made for you, and it's only a line that's going to be pushed forward the more they want to control your speech. Same thing with QAnon. You know how I feel about this obvious ploy meant to make you trust the government, but that does not mean I ever agree with them being censored. The answer to bad speech and manipulation is always more speech, more information. That's the point. The government wants you to think that they need to step in and control the flow of information to stop the bad, evil manipulators from tricking you. Trust mommy, daddy, government, because we're going to tell you how to think, and then you'll be safe forever. Just... Right? I mean, it's so dumb to say that this is how people actually see the world. Now, as Zero Hedge continues on the same topic in regard to banning ads questioning safety of specifically COVID-19 vaccines, it says over the past few months, Facebook has done a complete 180 on its position about speech, particularly sensitive political speech. Right? So it's interesting. And that's why I showed you the first articles of them saying this back in March and everything, is that they're ultimately tried to hang on to saying, well, we're not going to remove it, and then just basically did a complete U-turn, censoring things, banning entire groups. I mean, this has always kind of been happening. But now we're seeing it on its face. Now, I just wanted to check this really quick to make sure there wasn't something important happening that somebody just sent in regard to... Interesting. All right. Well, where was I? Let's get back into this. So I just want to make sure there wasn't something breaking that was happening just now. But back to this. Oh, that's weird. That popped up. All right. Back to the point. 180. Completely turned around on it. And I think that whether that's because they were just waiting for now or because they were pressured, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is this is a tipping point. And I think we're in an end game here, guys. That's why everything is getting very alarming and rapidly happening. It says, and as global authorities struggle to convince the public that an eventual COVID-19 vaccine will be safe to take, despite the expedited approval process, Facebook has decided to give them a hand by banning all content encouraging users to refuse to take a vaccine, which is not actually correct. It laid out the new global policy in a blog post published Tuesday. Now, do I think that's what's going to happen? Yes, 100%. I think it's already happening. But that's not what they're reporting. So just to be fair and honest about what's being stated, what they're saying is they're going to ban ads, not all content encouraging that. But again, do I think that's happening? Yes, I do. Very much so. And they're clearly giving them a hand and censoring this information and controlling the flow of that information. It says it laid out the new global policy in a blog post published Tuesday. Facebook will draw the line in allowing users who advocate against mandatory vaccination, which the company said was a legitimate political position. Basically saying you're allowed to go on and say, you can't force everyone to take this. That's because you know why? They're not gonna. They're gonna play the social exclusion game and pretend like we're not forcing anybody to do anything, but you can't go on a plane or go in a store or watch a movie or go to the movie. You can't do anything without having your vaccination card, which has already been pointed out in the Operation Warp Speed document, which has already been pointed out in ID 2020. They're all happening. They're all ready, and they're all gonna be used to make sure to decide whether or not you can go in certain areas. It's happening already, right now. While the above ad will be allowed, and that's this one, stop forced coronavirus vaccinations, under the new rules, ads that explicitly discourage people from taking vaccines by portraying the vaccine as ineffective or unsafe will be banned. Did you hear that? So people who are discouraging people from taking the vaccine by portraying it as ineffective or unsafe, despite the fact that it's not even ready yet, we have yet to even have a product that has been proven to be safe or effective, and they're banning people from suggesting that it might be unsafe and ineffective. I mean, while we're having trials that are coming out showing people getting sick, does that not show the most disgustingly obvious bias of all time? It's this inherent decision that because it's the whole thing of the vaccine discussion from the beginning. They have chosen a side in this discussion, and so they're just staying on that side while trying to pretend like they're not. But on top of all of that, censoring vaccine information. Twitter is just adding new restrictions to crack down on basically anything they want to. Spam, misinformation, whatever they want that to mean ahead of election day. All of this is leading in the same direction. They're controlling everything coming out right now to such a degree, it's quite impressive. I mean, really watching the way that this is happening, and it's very chilling. But if you can't see, if this isn't allowing you to see the control that they always have over you, then you're just not paying attention. Now, all that information, by the way, that they're taking from you, using all of this, using contact tracing, using your social media, using everything that they claimed wasn't going to do it this time, well, they did it this time. How the UK track and trace data from restaurants is being harvested and sold on. Right, so the point is that the very thing we told you was going to happen, the very thing that they swore wouldn't happen, is happening. And remember when I keep pointing out how they act like, well, you know, it's going to be private. And when they say that, what they're meaning in their mind is from your neighbor, but not from them, of course, because we need it to keep you safe. But what people actually think when they hear private, they think from the government, and they play on that deception constantly. So here we are in a situation where they told you this wouldn't happen. No, your information is going to be kept private, and we're going to only use this to keep you safe. And then they took that information, used it for their purposes, and then sold it and made money from your information that you told them you weren't allowed to do that with. But of course, because COVID-19, no one's going to be held accountable because everything's up in the air, because you're in danger. Go back inside, put your mask on. How dare you accuse me of breaking the law? It's now been revealed that private firms are collecting UK government NIH track and trace data taken unknowingly from visitors to pubs and restaurants, harvested and then sold on to marketing firms for profit. New reports this week reveal how mobile apps using quick QR codes operating under the auspices of the government's COVID surveillance operation are trafficking customer data through opt-in clauses baked into the terms and conditions of data storage services. You mean like literally every other time before this? Yep, the same exact thing. They write it very quietly in the bottom of 45-page terms of services that says, we can do whatever we want. And then we pretend like, oh, we didn't know. We told you it was going to be private, but you signed the terms of service. It's your fault. Oh, you mean the thing that you made us put on our phone, or the thing that we didn't know was going to be like that, and you made promises, and it's obvious that they're dishonest. They are choosing to lie or play the dishonest game and act like they had no idea. Or that it's somehow your fault for choosing to sign the thing that you had to sign or had to use. It says some firms state how they will use device details scanned in by customers for marketing purposes and even keep your data, your personal data, for up to 25 years. I guess it's too late for all the people that unknowingly signed on for that. Too late now, right? Thanks, government. Clearly you care about us. Though this corporate backdoor, aloof customers would have their personal data passed on to corporate clients such as advertisers, big data brokers, insurance companies, to name a few. Contact tracing data harvested from pubs and restaurants being sold. Guys, this is just the beginning. And by the way, this is probably all of them. The only reason we're seeing this now is because it somehow got out. Do we really think that this is the case, that we're going to, that if Clapper can sit in front of Congress and be like, no, we're not taking your data, and then get caught doing exactly that, and no one ever holds him accountable, and the statute of limitations runs out on his crime, and nobody, I mean, they know this is happening, because that's the point. They're totally happy with lying to you, right to your face, and then they're totally happy with not even holding the person accountable for lying. So they're all in on it, is the point. They're stealing from you. They're taking your money. They're stealing your data. They're selling your data. And they're telling you to be quiet because it's for your safety. But let's trust them this next time, because I'm sure that's a good move. Now, one of the vaccines in general that we've already seen have multiple problems. I mean, all of these have had their issues. But the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine study was paused due to an unexplained illness. And as Whitney Webb points out, I'm sure it's nothing. Johnson & Johnson only knew there was asbestos in their baby powder for decades and did nothing about it, right? So if they're not willing to do anything about that serious of a problem, let's go ahead and assume this must be catastrophic for them to actually admit there's a problem. That's the point. If you question this company's product safety track record and how it could affect their COVID-19 vaccine, you're a naughty conspiracy theorist. How dare you question the obvious issues with a vaccine that's having obvious issues? You're crazy. That this is the world we live in, where you're not allowed to question the thing that's literally having problems. Johnson & Johnson says review of the illness that led to positive coronavirus vaccine trial could take days. Could take days, at least, to hear from a safety monitoring panel about its review of the company's late-stage COVID-19 vaccine trial. We're in the late stage. Remember, we just talked about this in the last show. At the most, 100 people, 100-something people in one of these trials, when they're supposed to be using tens of thousands, and their entire trial is designed to succeed. They're making these things easy to reach in a way that doesn't really apply. All it really does is to, at best, minimize the symptoms. There's no discussion of stopping you from dying, no discussion of lack of hospitalization. All they're really doing is trying to prove within a, in some cases, only about 7 to 8 people necessary having a less amount of symptoms. And that's called a success. And then they're going to give it to you. And then they're going to do very serious pharmacovigilance to test this vaccine in your body for 24 months. So for 2 years. So they test this thing for months at the most before it's ever been done before, a genetically modifying vaccine. Then they give it to you for 2 years. They test you. Shouldn't that be the reverse? Shouldn't it be 2 years making sure this thing actually works and then a couple months making sure that you're safe? Yeah, it should. But you see, because for your safety, if that even makes sense, we're rushing this out. For your safety, we're rushing out a very unsafe, dangerous thing that we haven't proven is even safe. It's for your safety, though. Just unbelievable. Now, on top of all that, Eli Lilly's trial of a coronavirus antibody treatment has been paused over safety concerns. And to the collective flip out of all Trump supporters going, oh my God, they're trying to control the new secret cure that Trump told us all about because we've already forgotten about the ones he said before. Now it's the new one secret cure, right? It's so incredible how easily swayed people are by people they choose to believe in. First of all, Eli Lilly, as I said earlier with somebody I was talking about, if we were going to draw a line, is probably on the Trump side. But it's more complicated than that. That's not the best way to put that. But realistically speaking, we're talking about a company whose former executive is Trump's health, is Alex Azar, right? So there's an obvious connection there. So my point being that when we have a company that's saying, well, we're slowing this down, pausing this over safety concerns, the assumption is that the Democrats are trying to stop this for political reasons, which you can see here, you spelled politics wrong. They're saying pause over politics, right? There's no insight into whether that company even has more ties to Trump than it does to anybody else. The assumption is just broadly, if it goes against what Trump says, then it must be some conspiracy. That is ignorance. You may be right, by the way, but the point is to assume that just because it does not amount to what you think it should is just simply blind faith in a person. It's a savior complex. That's where we are. So the point being, first of all, is that we're seeing all these issues. And I think the point of this pause treatment, whether fake, real, or whatever, is just simply meant to create the scenario where the vaccine is what's needed. I said it before, and we'll see what happens. But as somebody pointed out, and I think this is very interesting, he said, you guys complain, of course, talking about Trump supporters, but he's saying, you guys complain that it won't be safe because it will be rushed. But then also say that they aren't releasing it because of the election. Which one is it? Now, you could apply that either way, actually. You could apply that. Just apply it to the two-party paradigm. Right? You can see the contradiction. And this is the same thing I made in regard to moments ago, it was the Fauci Gates vaccine, and we're all going to be in trouble, and we got to stop it. And then the moment that Trump just took ownership of the very same vaccine that didn't just suddenly change, by the way, is now a good thing because Trump took control of it, which is just dumb. I mean, it's obviously the same vaccine. It's obviously being made by the same companies, being tied in with Moderna and AstraZeneca and Pfizer and Health and Human Services and Robert Kadlec and Emergent BioSolutions and all the people that are tied in with the problems. So is it going to be unsafe because it's rushed, or is it, it's obvious, you can see the ploy being happening. And the real point is this one. This is an interesting point to make. He said, it's funny when the Democrats turn into anti-vaxxers because of Trump. Now, think about this point for a second. Think about what we're talking about. So they're constantly accusing everybody of being anti-vaxxers, right? We're all anti-vaxxers because we question the safety of something that's been shown to be unsafe. Crazy stuff, right? But that's the point. And they broadly sweep in everybody that's not on the staunch side of supporting everything they say about vaccines as anti-vaxxer, which is just, it's intellectually dishonest. It's an ignorant, lazy argument, but they do it all the damn time. So the moment, and by the way, we're talking about, let's just say in discussion with Democrats in this argument, that before this, they were calling us anti-vaxxers because we were questioning it. Now, suddenly, because Trump is in control of the vaccine, which is all just a big illusion, it's all the same thing. But now suddenly you got people that are staunch Democrats that are saying, well, wait a minute. And we saw Biden talk about this. We saw Harris talk about this, that I'm not going to take this thing until, you know, because I don't trust Trump. We have to wait for this to happen. So are they suddenly anti-vaxxers? And what's the difference? The difference is that they don't agree with somebody who's there. So does that mean that I can decide that these don't work because I don't agree with the person in charge of the CDC? Of course not. It only applies when they do it, which means there's no logic whatsoever. They're calling you anti-vax because they want this agreement. They want this discussion to be this discussion, right? This is the case. Vaccines work. Shut up. You can't argue. And if you argue against it, you're an anti-vaxxer. But the moment that Trump steps into that same exact scenario, suddenly now we're questioning the whole process. So it's not about the actual science. It's about politics. And it's the same from the left or the right. So it's so stupid for them to still, in the midst of saying that they're not going to take this thing, that we're anti-vax for saying that it might be unsafe. But they're also saying the same thing. But it's only because of Trump, but we trust the science. Do you see the intellectual dishonesty in that argument? But they don't care. They just don't care. The moment that somebody's in control that they like, they'll go right back to saying that there's no reason you should question these things. Except that we just did because of a person who we don't agree with. These are children. I swear we're dealing with children. Whether it's the people that make these arguments, not this one I'm showing here, but the general discussion of what we're talking about, or the governments and the officials that force them in. These are child. It's childlike intellect to argue something so obviously ridiculous, something that's so obviously counter to what you've been screaming about for decades, just because you don't like one person. That is the epitome of being a child. Now, on this next discussion and this, we want to make sure, I actually already showed you this. The other part of this is they're saying that it's this short of clinically relevant data, and which to a degree. Now, first of all, let's be clear about these things. Whether we're talking hydroxychloroquine or remdesivir or blah, 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 Remgeneron or any other big pharma drug, understand that my point is that we shouldn't even be arguing about this nonsense. It should be your choice. If you're sick and you want to try something, there should be no one that should stand in your way and say, no, 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 we're going to let you die instead. Because we haven't approved that through our stuffy process, right? The point is that it's your choice. If you're sick or you feel like you should be able to choose. But they're trying to get you to argue within this, inside the two-party illusion of big pharma drugs, and get you to argue about which one is right. The Democrats want this and the Republicans want that. And ultimately, it's going to lead to the vaccine, which I keep saying, and we'll see what happens. But the bottom line is that you should be able to choose for yourself. So this doesn't need to be a bipartisan argument. But at the end of the day, we know that this thing is very new. And so realistically speaking, if this was not happening within the two-party paradigm in the middle of COVID-19, Trump versus Biden, if this was happening 10 years ago, it would have been obvious, a no-brainer. This thing has barely been tested. It's 10 people used it before Trump ever tried it. This usually takes years of trials. Right? Okay, so it's a no-brainer to argue that there's a lack of data. But that suddenly becomes a Democrat ploy because Trump said this thing works. Again, that's a childish argument. And again, I want to reiterate the fact that if we're really making a point about this, Eli Lilly, which is the group that they're now saying is, you know, the one there, it's a conspiracy, they're trying to shut it down for politics. Well, it doesn't make much sense. But none of these things do need to make sense. It's only about the narrative. And to finish off here, I want to make sure that's frustrating. I just realized I forgot to start recording. Oh, well. The last point here, which is we're going to finish off with some foreign policy, by the way. And hooray, we are. Oh, I shouldn't say that. But jump the gun. I was going to say we got this done when it's not too long. It's only been an hour. Watch me take an hour in foreign policy. No surprise there. But this is incredible to me. This is a really big deal because this is the point I made earlier in the show where I said what they're doing is taking the plight of you and I, or you and me, technically, is the correct way to say that. And they're using that to lay shade or to cover the big business. Viewpoint, federal and state civil immunity from COVID-19 lawsuits. Now, the broader point of this argument on the article is talking specifically about businesses reopening and then individuals suing them for, I think what they're trying to make the point of, like, let's say you go to the business and you catch COVID-19 because they reopened, that you could then sue them for allowing you to get sick even though you went to their business. But that's actually what this is, the argument's being made here. But when you see as we go through it, they're using that as kind of a what's the right word for it? I guess a red herring. Because what it's really showing me here is they're using this to apply to all business, most importantly, the big business. And so you can't sue these big businesses for seemingly anything after this happens. Now, here's how it reads. Hundreds of COVID-19 lawsuits, and this is just a discussion, by the way, have been filed across the country, and business leaders say, business leaders, right, say liability immunity is necessary in order to protect against abusive and meritless lawsuits. Okay, so first of all, we already have broad sweeping immunity for any vaccine producer, including, or as far as I understand it, the HHS already has it laid out for any treatment of any kind, anything involving COVID-19 that they want to put under this umbrella, broad immunity. And it's not just vaccines. It's applying to other treatments they're using, PPE stuff, administration stuff, hospital stuff. I mean, there's a huge umbrella of people that are potentially could hurt you for other reasons that don't even have to do with the treatments and vaccines, and they're completely removed of liability. Like, for instance, if a nurse in the process of giving you that vaccine slips and pokes your eye out with the vaccine syringe, well, they have immunity. I'm not even making that up. The point is that they're immune in the process of delivering COVID-19 treatments. Now, that's a really ridiculous extreme example, but the point is that the broad immunity applies to everything under the COVID-19 umbrella, or more specifically, what HHS says applies underneath that umbrella. So in this case, as they're talking about this and making you think of small businesses, realize that this is talking about a broad liability immunity for businesses. Now, it says big and small businesses alike, you see right there, are targeted for opportunistic lawsuits. And realistically, it's big business. Sure, there are some people that may want to sue a small business, but the reality is most people are smart enough to realize that you sue a small business, you might get nothing because they might not have that much money. But you sue Walmart, you'll probably get something. And you see, this is the point. So what they're really concerned about is little guys like us suing the big companies for all the things they've done to us so far, under the guise of keeping you small business safe from illegal and meritless lawsuits. It's a ploy, in my opinion. Just the mere threat of litigation, it says, may cause many businesses to remain closed or delay reopening because few businesses can afford the cost of defending a lawsuit following weeks of business disruption amid the sudden economic recession. Now, let's be clear. Do you think Walmart or Boeing or any big company out there that's already gotten money from your pocket because COVID-19 is afraid to reopen? Or can't afford the cost of defending a lawsuit? Obviously not. They're trying to use, again, the plight of the small person to lay the cover for the big companies. And the small person will reopen no matter what. You know why? Because they can't feed their family right now. So they're going to reopen no matter what. They're not going to quibble about reopening their business because they're afraid of a lawsuit that hasn't happened yet. That happens for people like Walmart, people like McDonald's. That's the point. It says 16 states, and this is actually this is incredible. 16 states have enacted already legislation providing some form of civil immunity from COVID-19 lawsuits for a broad range of businesses. Understand, this is in addition to the HHS immunity for vaccines and distribution. Just a broad range of businesses. And these states include Georgia, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Mississippi, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Utah, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. And it says in a dozen other states have legislation pending right now, if enacted, would provide varying degrees of civil immunity. And again, we're talking about just broad immunity from these companies being sued in regard to something broadly connected to what we're dealing with. And do you realize how incredible that is in a situation where so many companies have towed the line and enforced illegal mandates on you and have done things that are against your constitutional rights, and you have every right to sue them? And that's why this is happening. At what point in our history has our government tried to give such broad immunity to literally everything in the middle of such a situation? It's never happened before. And that should tell you something. It says on July 21st, 2020, July. So in the middle, if this was happening in July, 21 governors, including those from many states that already passed some form of civil immunity, forwarded a letter to Capitol Hill seeking new federal protections to preempt the widely inconsistent and ever-changing patchwork of liability-limiting state laws. It says New York, Alaska, and Oklahoma already provide immunity to healthcare providers, but not other entities or individuals. Right? Again, that is even different in addition to the HHS. That's a federal level. Right? So what they're saying is on top of that, they also give immunity to healthcare providers. Like, do you realize how broad that is? Again, that applies to any scenario. Even if they make a mistake that has nothing to do with the actual administration of the vaccine or whatever else. It says North Carolina extends protections to essential businesses. Utah extends liability immunity to any company for injuries resulting from exposure of an individual to COVID-19 on their premises. Now, this is where I argue they're trying to make you think this has to do with the average person going back into a business that just reopened and then suing them for getting sick, which there's no way that would ever hold up in court because you went in there of your own volition and you can't ever prove that they got you sick unless you can physically prove that they took some kind of action. So that's not some meritless lawsuit, right? The point being that this is about people attacking big business and that's what they're trying to protect while using your plight to cover for that. Now it says Tennessee provides civil immunity for all premises liability, product liability, and medical liability claims, and get this, occurring prior to July 1st, 2022. So apparently anything now prior to July 1st, 2022 has liability in regard to the location, the product, and just general medical liability. Everything before that? I mean, this is just absurd. This is obscene. Georgia created a rebuttal presumption that an individual assumes the risk of infection where the premises owner signed a warning that there is no liability for injury or death of a person entering that premise that results from contracting COVID-19. Why does that even make sense? Why would you need to even say that? This is all just a massive deception as far as I can tell. Now it says in the safe to work, this is the point, the safe to work legislation, which stands for safeguarding America's frontline employees to offer work opportunities required to kickstart the economy. Jesus. Act S4317. The proposed legislation would provide broad liability immunity for businesses, healthcare workers, and facilities, educational institutions, and local governments. And there is the kicker. Not only are they applying this to the government, to the location, to the medications, to the administration, they're literally giving themselves liability. They're saying that we local governments are going to be immune from being liable about all of this stuff. Now, again, is this going to be applied everywhere in the country? Maybe not. Is it already happening? Yes, it is. The idea that this is all happening around you right now, without us even being aware it's happening, and they're giving themselves liability from actions that hurt you and put your family at risk, how in the world do we not see what's going on right now? The reason we don't see what's going on, or the reason actually that we don't change or stop what's going on, is because of the two-party illusion. That's why. Every single time, because people who want to fight for their side refuse to recognize what's literally happening in front of us because they choose to believe that their side will be the one that changes it. And so they trust the plan, or they wait it out, and they wait and continue and vote and do all the things, and it goes around and around and around again. Difference this time is, I don't think we've got another 4 years coming around after this. Civil immunity. Now, here is exactly why I think that. Stuff just like this. And then we'll get into some foreign policy to finish off the show. This is quite unnerving.
Next question. The member for Lanark, Frontenac, Kingston.
Thank you, Speaker. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. In my supplemental question yesterday, I asked this government if the people of Ontario should prepare for internment camps. In September, the federal government posted a call for expressions of interest for contractors to supply, provide, and manage quarantine isolation camps throughout every province and every territory in Canada. These quarantine isolation camps, however, are not limited to people with COVID.
Now, think about when you hear people in the background, you know, screaming, oh my God, you can hear the other people being verbal about their, and listen to what he's actually saying. This is a very logical statement to argue that what they're saying is they're creating these camps and they're stating that they're for more people than just people with COVID. And that's not a valid point. So much so that most of the people in the room are going, oh my God, this is so stupid. Like, and these are adults in government. And this is how they're responding? Does that not show you where we are?
In September, the federal government posted a call for expressions of interest for contractors to supply, provide, and manage quarantine isolation camps throughout every province and every territory in Canada. These quarantine isolation camps, however, are not limited to people with COVID, but provide a wide latitude for many people to be detained. Surely this government is aware of the intentions to build these isolation camps from coast to coast. And my question to the Premier is, how many of these camps will be built, and how many people does this government expect to detain?
Question.
Okay, so this is a valid question based on the reality that what they're talking about is setting up camps that are going to be used for a broad range of people. So he's just asking point blank, how many people are you planning on detaining? And they just can't even they can't even contain their disdain because you're not supposed to ask that question.
Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is very true that when people leave the country and when they come back in, that the province is suggesting and the federal government, in cooperation with the federal government, we are suggesting that people isolate themselves. That has been a practice.
I don't always make these kind of points, but it's obvious this person is a little on edge. Like, he wasn't expecting to have to answer this question, or at the very least, that he's not sure how he's supposed to answer this question. Listen to how he starts again.
Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is very true that when people leave the country and when they come back in, that the province is suggesting and the federal government, in cooperation with the federal government, we are suggesting that people isolate themselves. That has been a practice that has been very successful, not only here in the province of Ontario, but across Canada. And we will, of course, be redoubling our efforts.
He's not even answering. The point is, you clearly state that you're going to use this for more than people with COVID. It's a broad range of people. How many people? And he goes on, well, the government said that it's safe to lock people up and that we need to do that, and locking them up is good for them. And it's nonsense. Like, he's just asserting the idea that it's because of COVID and because we have to be safe. This is the kind of rigmarole we found ourselves in. Like, there's no actual dialogue happening anymore. It's almost overwhelming.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is very true that when people leave the country and when they come back in, that the province is suggesting and the federal government, in cooperation with the federal government, we are suggesting that people isolate themselves. That has been a practice that has been very successful, not only here in the province of Ontario, but across Canada. And we will, of course, be redoubling our efforts to make sure that the people of the province of Ontario remain safe, Mr. Speaker. So if the member is referring to the fact that that one of the public health policies is that when you return from a jurisdiction outside of the province of Ontario or from another country, that you isolate yourself for 2 weeks, I would suggest that has been a good policy that has been working. In fact, this House has been doing the same thing since we came back. We are working in cohorts to make sure that the Legislative Assembly can continue to operate. That's why we have two separate cohorts, Mr. Speaker.
Response.
And the cooperation of the official opposition, that is why all members of the independents...
None of this has answered the question, and I think we all see that. Saying basically just falling back into, well, if they leave, they have to come back in, they have to quarantine, and how dare you suggest that that's not the right thing to do, right? That's the sentiment that's coming across.
I've been excluded from that cohort because we want them to be able to participate in debate. So we will continue to do everything in our power to make sure that this House continues, but that the people of the province of Ontario and Canada are kept safe.
Well, everything in our power to keep you safe. That means we're going to do whatever we want, right? I mean, he didn't ask, are you going to do everything in your power to keep us safe? But of course, he repeated that 5 times in that one statement that didn't answer the actual question. We're going to do whatever we have to do to keep people safe. Which basically means we don't care about your rights.
Supplementary question. Again, back to the Premier. here's the RFP. And in the RFP, it uses clear language to express that these caps can be used for a broad spectrum.
Now listen to the people in the background. If you can hear it, it might be a little quiet, but you can hear them. Talk about no decorum, right? And even, and it's just absurd that they're just like almost shouting out when he's reading.
Of people, not limited to travelers. Indeed, it doesn't even mention international travelers. It just...
That's another interesting point, that he's making the point that it's only about people coming from international travel, and the document they're referring to doesn't even mention international travelers. Why is this not suspicious to people?
Caps can be used for a broad spectrum of people, not limited to travelers. Indeed, it doesn't even mention international travelers. It's just a broad latitude of people. And I'll send over the copy of the RFP after. So your government must be in negotiations and aware of these plans to potentially detain and isolate citizens and residents of our country and our province. So, Speaker, to the Premier, where will these camps be built? How many people will be detained?
You hear it in the background?
And for what reasons? Questions. For what reasons can people be kept in these isolation camps? And I'd like to have the Premier assure the people of Ontario.
Member, take a seat.
Just literally cuts off his microphone, tells him to sit down.
The next question.
He says, wait, no answer? They cut off his microphone. I mean, this is unbelievable to me that we can be in such a position. Where, I mean, and there's members of the parliament back laughing out loud when he's asking a very honest question, whether you think so or not, and then just doesn't answer his question. Sure, that's not suspicious at all. Where are they? How many people will be going there? What's the metric for how you put them there? Ha ha ha, you crazy conspiracy theorist. It's amazing how blind people are to where we are right now. Right, whether we're talking Canada, the UK, the United States, it's all the same. It's all the same, and it's happening right in front of you. Just got to open your eyes. Now, to finish off here, a few points that I want to end with on foreign policy. Interesting discussion. Now, I just had an interview with Vanessa Bealey today in regard to a really unnerving situation in regard to the BBC. Setting up an entire hit piece that they're about to come out with, which we only know about because they were trying to get information from her. And so we're coming out with information to show that this is happening because they're accusing her of actual crimes. They're actually suggesting that she could be arrested for fighting for the voiceless in Syria, that those governments, both the UK and the United States, have been actively bombing, killing, starving, on and on and on. And the BBC has been caught and accused multiple times of being involved with covering that up. But sure, they're attacking Vanessa. So that will be coming out tomorrow with an article from Robert Inlakesh, as well as the interview we did today. And on that note, we're staring at more examples of this kind of stuff happening. I mean, what we covered briefly in the interview was things like the oil being stolen, the wheat fields being burned, with the constant attacks on the Syrian people by the very governments that pretend they're fighting for their freedom. The constant support for terrorists on the ground, including the White Helmets. The constant support for people that are actually fighting against the Syrian people. The constant false flags like Douma, where our governments were involved with actively helping and creating that lie and then bombing based on that lie, which took human life. So now we're in a situation where yet again, and by the way, in the past, more than once when Russia has spoken up and said, this is what's about to happen in regard to obvious evidence, which we later verified that the US government or the UK were involved with setting up a false flag. Well, it turned out to happen. Now, of course, they try to say, well, they did that because they set it up and then they accused us so they could. Well, the evidence later proved that was very clearly not true, but that didn't stop them from saying it over and over. Well, here we have another example. Syrian militants delivered chlorine barrels to stage provocation in Idlib. Here we go again. Remember this old story that went quiet for a while while they were distracted with COVID-19 lies? Yeah. Well, now it looks like they need more distraction. So they're going back to the old rigmarole, right? Let's start up Idlib again. Right? Not like it hasn't been continually going on and the Syrian people have been continually suffering this whole time. But you see, that part of the story they don't care about. They only care about when they can use the scare tactics of the story. So they were more than happy to allow these people just to continue to starve and suffer and have no electricity while they pretend they're fighting for them. You see how that works? Constantly. Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, Venezuela, Bolivia, on and on and on. These people are all suffering because of the actions of your government. Now, Russia is telling you right here again that they're setting something up. Now, it doesn't mean we know what's going to happen. Russia could be lying about that. Could be any number of reasons. But it's important to note that they said it would happen. So when something possibly happens in the days to come, it'll be remembered that they told you it might happen. And by the way, have been correct about this in the past. According to Russian military officials in Syria, Islamic militants in Idlib governance have delivered several barrels of chlorine to the White Helmets in preparation for a new provocation, which right there in itself will be very relevant to what we're going to be talking about tomorrow. The fact that the White Helmets are working with terrorists. The fact that they're operating in terrorist-held areas. The fact that they're continually caught with all kinds of horrible things. Where the people, I mean, we have multiple examples of White Helmets leaders being shown fighting with Al-Qaeda, with patches on their arms, holding weapons. As she points out in the interview, humanitarian aid people do not arm themselves. That's not how this works. And in fact, the obvious point is the absurd reality that it's so easy to show that the actual civil defense was around before they created the White Helmets. They stole the name of what they were and hurt the took over the people. Right? The real civil defense actually exists still. Right? They're not the ones walking around with English written on the back of their shirts. How do we not catch this stuff? Right? Because it makes sense that the Syrian civil defense would be written in English on the back of their shirts, right? Totally makes sense. Right? Because the point is that, well, they're being funded by new groups that are helping out. Well, no, they've had the equipment and the shirts and everything else long before this ever became a political point. They've existed long before, and they still exist now. The White Helmets are not the Syrian civil defense. That's the illusion. They're a UK-US psychological manipulation, right? They're a ploy, a plot, a manipulation. On Tuesday, Rear Admiral Alexander Grinkevich, deputy head of the Russian Defense Ministry Center for Syrian Reconciliation, reported in a daily briefing that the center had evidence Islamist rebels, you know, the people that are being funded and armed and protected by the U.S. government, by the U.K. government, over and over and over and over, it's proven, where they're shuttling people back and forth between Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria. But yeah, we're all crazy conspiracies here. Just ignore all the evidence. Ignore all the evidence that ISIS itself was created and armed and funded and protected by all these same entities. Ben Swan's done an incredible documentary on it. But we're all crazy because evidence doesn't matter. They reported in a briefing that they're bringing in these chlorine barrels to Idlib and preparing for a new provocation. Tuesday's report is just the latest incident of rebels in Idlib attempting to stage such an incident. Supposed use of chemical weapons has repeatedly been used by Western powers as an excuse to attack Syrian government, either through intentional pressure or airstrikes, over and over. And as we're staring at Douma being completely shown to be an obvious false flag that the US government, the UK government, and the locals and the extremists they're funding on the ground were behind is undeniable. Undeniable. We have to see that. 20 plus people from inside the OCPC to OPCW, a writer from Newsweek, a producer from BBC. I mean, how much do we really need to realize how obviously that they're lying to you? Just because they fire everybody and hire a bunch of lackeys that will do what they're told and then act like now it's correct? That's just absurd. But we'll have to wait and see what happens with this. Hopefully we don't see more people killed by the actions of these merciless terrorist-supporting governments. You know, the governments that are also supporting this, right? For all the people that were going, oh, Ryan hates America, and that's why he's talking bad about it. Well, how do you explain this? How do you explain how no one wants to talk about the governments of Saudi Arabia and the United States, and along with the UK, continuing to murder children in Yemen that no one talks about? Does that mean I hate America because I point out the fact that our government is killing people? No, it means I fight for this country, but not the government that's stolen it from you. You see, you have been swayed and manipulated into thinking that they're one and the same. It's sort of sad that point needs to continue to be made, that the government and the country are two very separate and distinct things. The government are your agents. They work on behalf of the people, or so we're told. They do what you want, or so we're told. Obviously, that's not the case today. The country is you. You are the country. That's the point. So when we point out the fact that our government is doing things that you don't agree with, our government is hurting people abroad, That's the opposite of un-American. That's in fact quintessentially American, as I always say, because it takes courage to stand up and point out the crimes of the people that are supposed to be fighting for you. You know, sort of like the way this country was founded. I guess we just forget that though, right? It says a school in Yemen's Taiz province was bombarded at least twice on Sunday, leaving at least one child killed and five other civilians wounded. These are reports that called the attacks an aerial bombardment, though some also mentioned artillery fire on the site. Officials blamed mercenaries for the attacks, which broadly means groups affiliated with the Saudi, U.S.-led Saudi invasion force. There were reportedly two distinct strikes, the first injuring a woman and two children, the second less than an hour later killing a child, injuring a father and son. Why wouldn't we hear about this on the media? Does this not matter? Do specific lives in Syria matter more than Yemeni lives? Do Yemeni lives not matter? Apparently not. Because as these people were definitely killed, it definitely happened, and it definitely was the fault and action of the Saudi invasion force led by the U.S. government. And that, my friends, is exactly why it's not being reported. Which should always show you the hypocrisy of the people pretending they're fighting for human life, when in reality, they're fighting for what human life they can exploit the most. It's sickening. Stalemated places tend to become targets of persistent strikes against obvious civilian targets, killing civilians in large numbers but rarely changing control of any serious areas within the city. That is a summation of exactly what Yemen has become, since the Obama administration. It is just an ongoing civilian bombing zone. And yet nobody seems to care about that. And it's all because of somebody else's fault. It's not the fault of the obvious leading ally of the U.S. government that's continually bombing and killing those civilians. No. It's the fault of a government that's not even there, that's miles and miles away from where this is, that they claim is part of the illusion that's happening there, but not the bombs falling or killing them. No, it's not that. Right? It's the other government we're telling you about. Of course, it's Iran's fault. Don't worry that the Saudi government and the U.S. government are continuing to bomb and starve and attack people on the ground. It's not their fault. It's because Iran did things there that forced them to murder civilians. So even though the U.S. government and Saudis are actually murdering civilians, it's Iran's fault for making them murder civilians. How dare they? What terrorists? That sounds dumb, doesn't it? Because it is dumb. Because the reality is there's no way to misunderstand whose bombs are killing who in Yemen. But that's why you don't hear about it. Truly sickening. Now, another interesting story. I would argue because of who it's being reported by here that this is being meant to be some kind of a positive story, but you have to realize how inherently hypocritical. This is the definition of being a hypocrite. Excuse me. Because you have to consider the story that we just talked about, or even any number of other stories. Where the U.S. is claiming that, well, we're sticking our nose in here in Yemen because we don't agree with what Iran is doing or anybody else, even though Iran's not actually there. They're doing what they think is right, or so they claim, in any number of scenarios. So now imagine, let's say, for instance, China decided to come over and say, hey, Hawaii doesn't want to be part of the United States anymore. Because Hawaii, and by the way, I lived there for 2 years, and they don't. They're very, very much considered the populace, I mean, not the government that's put in there. Hawaii was an occupation by force. That's very easy to look up, by the way. That's not even hidden. The U.S. government violently went in and completely colonized Hawaii and just took it violently. That's what the U.S. government has always done, by the way. We don't like to talk about that, but that's what they are. That's what they're still doing now, and they're hiding it under a blanket of false humanitarian claims. But if China came and just said, hey, Hawaii wants to be free, and again, the point is that most people there actually do not think they're part of, they consider themselves Hawaiian. So you can make a real argument for why Hawaiian people want to be their own place. So if China stepped in and said, hey, they want freedom, and then started giving weapons to Hawaii. Do you think that would be okay? Do you think that the White House and Trump would not flip out and basically go to war? I think we obviously know what would happen. So this is now happening, which, by the way, I told you would happen. The White House informed Congress today, and this was on the 13th, so that is today, that they are going, they intend to sell MQ-9 drones and a coastal defensive missile system to Taiwan as part of its package of seven different weapon systems. Taiwan, even it, which is in dispute, China believes is part of China and realistically has been for a long time. Now, if Taiwan wants to have independence, do I agree with that? Of course I do. But the fact that the U.S. government stepping in and making doing what they want with it, obviously because it benefits them, is not the same thing. And at the very least, even if you agree with the U.S. doing that, well, then you have to agree with it happening in the other circumstance. And then you have to realize how hypocritical it is for them to sell weapons to them and then quibble about other countries helping countries that the U.S. is involved in. How we can't let Russia be involved in Syria. We can't let anybody else, Cuba, Iran, anybody be involved in Venezuela. Like, it's just so, it's disgustingly hypocritical. It's good when they do it, right? Might is right, is the point. When we do it, it's okay. When they do it, they're bad guys. The bottom line is what they're doing here is not about freedom. It's not about helping anybody. It's about causing a rift between Taiwan and China. It's about asserting themselves. It's about creating the kind of chaos they use to distract from everything else going on. Blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, this is wrong. Now, if you want to fight for the freedom of Taiwan, there's plenty of actual mechanisms by which to try to do that. Do I believe it'll probably happen? No. But nonetheless, there's any number of things that they haven't tried. Now, you can argue that they won't work, but to jump immediately to selling them weapons instead of going to the UN, going to different agreements, and I mean, I would argue most of the world would probably side with Taiwan. But instead of even attempting that, they just do nothing and sell weapons because that's all they know how to do. Because this is not about freedom, it's about war. It's about violence. It's about the military-industrial complex. And it's also about being a screaming hypocrite. But it's okay when good guy does it, not when bad guy does it, though. Oh, also, by the way, did you know that Trump is saying that he wants to remove hundreds of troops from Somalia? And at that moment when most people go, wait a minute, we have troops in Somalia? Realize that's the point. And this is the most absurd play for the election. The idea of trying to paint the illusion of drawing down your foreign engagements. When in reality, here is a perfect example of one field of war that Trump has exponentially increased, despite what anybody else wants to say. All we hear is Trump hasn't created any new wars. Somebody says, is this U.S. vagabond or Russia today? What an ignorant statement. You see the point? You see the point? We have a Gand elf in the chat here saying, right, because I can talk about something from an outside perspective and argue that instead of saying what they said has to be fake because Russia, because I'm an ignorant person, I open my mind to the reality that what they say may be true and then say, think for yourself and let's wait and see what happens. But yeah, must be Russia today over here. Do you realize how blinded people are by this? Like, this person's actually in the chat listening and they're sitting there thinking to themselves, oh, this guy must be a Russian chill or whatever. It's just astounding, right? But this is the problem with where we are today. That people have been so swayed by the media they consume that they can no longer think for themselves. They can't realize that just because Russia says something doesn't automatically mean that it has to be fake because Russia, bad guy. Might as well go back to kindergarten if that's how you think. The point is you should be an adult and evaluate each scenario equally and on its own, right? But God forbid, let's just jump into preconceived conclusions about anything we were told to think about. Good for you. Somalia. Yeah, that's a field of war that has gotten much, much worse, and that's because of the bombings of the Trump administration. Bloomberg published a story on Wednesday that cited anonymous sources who said President Trump is looking to withdraw hundreds of troops from Somalia. Anonymous sources, probably Donald Trump. Probably Mike Pompeo, probably putting that out there just to seed that into the conversation so we can act like we might be leaving and drawing down so his supporters can misrepresent that as Trump is pulling troops down. Not going to happen. A war the administration has significantly escalated since 2017. That goes against the very claims of their supporters. The point is that all of these wars have continued, they've gotten worse, and yes, there are new fields of war, such as Bolivia. Yeah, well, it's already over, right? But they created a military coup and took over the country. That is called a new field of war. In 2017, Donald Trump loosened the rules of engagement for the drone war, and his administration has dropped a record number of bombs on Somalia. Does that sound like freedom? Does that sound like de-escalation? I mean, most people don't even realize it's happening. And by the way, they kill civilians very frequently that doesn't get reported. It says in 2019, the U.S. conducted 63 airstrikes in Somalia. Why? Do you even know? Do you, as an American out there, do you know what's going on there? Do you care about what's going on there? Do you vote about what's going on there? None of it. You don't have any say in what's going on. I would argue if Americans actually collected as a collective and discussed whether or not we should be bombing Somalia, the point is probably we would want to. But of course, then they say, well, it's because national security and we've got information that, well, whose taxes are you using? Right? This point that we're supposed to blindly trust them with secret information to decide who takes lives around the world is so far off the rails, it makes me sick. And I shouldn't say it like that. It's sickening. But it says the first 7 months of 2020 saw more U.S. airstrikes in Somalia than were conducted, get this, during both administrations of George W. Bush and Barack Obama combined. But keep telling yourself that it's only gotten better. More in just, look, it's the first 7 months of 2020, more U.S. airstrikes just in Somalia than all of George Bush and Obama combined. Think about that. It says the war in Somalia is extremely underreported and it's tough to know how many damaging it is to the civilians on the ground. I've reported on numerous ones that get ignored where the civilians on the ground are saying you killed my family and they just go, fake news. U.S. Africa Command usually claims that their strikes only kill militants and only occasionally have to admit civilian deaths. Why are any of these okay? Right? They regularly kill civilians. It may be here and there. They may admit to it here and there, but they do. And that's become okay? Why? In an area that we're not invested in as Americans, that we don't realize we even understand what's going on there. There's so much happening in Africa that we don't even understand. And they're killing people to do it with your tax dollars in your name. But yeah, no worries. Let's focus on some other variation of the election and some other nonsense. Oh, and by the way, the big bad Iran bad guy, I guess you didn't hear that big news because the media didn't care to tell you that the IAEA, you know, the International Atomic Energy Agency, that the media kept saying was, oh, breathlessly, they're going to find out that Iran's making a bomb because that's what we keep getting told, right? That's what we keep getting told. Oh my gosh, 2012, Iran on the brink of a nuclear bomb in 6 to 7 months. Well, that didn't pan out. You realize that Netanyahu's been saying that every 6 months for years, well before 2012, and yet they keep going with it? Well, the point is that the IAEA literally just came back and said, well, they don't have enough uranium to make a bomb. Not only that, that they're well below the threshold. And of course, the media just ignored that entirely. Why? Because it challenges what they've been breathlessly telling you for months, for years. And as always, shows you that their job is not to keep you informed, but to keep you misinformed in very specific ways. Otherwise, that would have been like, oh, look at that. That's a very important piece of news that we've been reporting wrong this whole time. How about we show you the truth? Not today's mainstream media, not ever. The International Atomic Energy Agency Director Rafael Grossi took the opportunity in an interview this weekend to publicly dismiss allegations about Iran nearing breakout capability, because Netanyahu has yet again made that absurd claim, saying they don't have enough enriched uranium to even make a single nuclear bomb. That's from the very organization they kept telling you is going to make this whole thing come out. Do you realize how dumb it is that somebody like Netanyahu can literally make this claim every year for decades and continue to pretend like it's valid and have people like John Bolton and Mike Pompeo continue to then parrot it as if it's absolute fact every single time it turns out to be false? He stands up with his Wile E. Coyote cartoon bomb display and says they're about this close to getting a bomb, and then it doesn't happen. Comes out later with his wall of CDs and says they're about 6 months away from making a bomb. It doesn't happen. And here we are again, over and over and over. Why don't we see how obvious this is? A lot has been made of the breakout time with the Iranian uranium stockpile growing, but Grossi noted Iran is still only enriching at below the 4.5% low levels they committed to under the nuclear deal. Oops. Of course, right now it's 4.5 because of the mechanisms they've enacted because the U.S. removed themselves from the deal, because they're pushing sanctions. And the IAE is literally telling you what I've been saying from the beginning, that what they're doing right now is allowable within the deal. It's a mechanism that they enacted. I think it was 26, Article 26. And it's because of actions taken by the U.S. And right now, they're maintaining their below 4.5 level, which is within the deal. So what they're actually saying is you've been lied to. What they're doing is completely legitimate, and it's because of other people's actions. And so Iran has never attempted to go beyond 20% enrichment, while weaponization would require, as I keep telling you, 90 to 95% enrichment. Yeah, they're at 4.4. But listen to Netanyahu, 6 months away, right? Because of some secret thing that we can't show you that never ends up happening. It's just obscene how often this continues. But Trump, all of them are supporting this happily. And of course, to finish off, just a perfect extension of everything we've been saying, right? Don't forget that we just talked about them increasing the drone program, right? In regard to Somalia, 2017, which I believe this is the same discussion. 18. Well, this is so technically two separate things. 2017, President Trump loosened the rules of engagement, which allowed the wild exponential increase in bombings, which was more in Somalia than the combined amount of George Bush and Barack Obama, which routinely kills civilians. That's a fact. Well, this was released on July 15, 2020, talking about a 2018 secret. This is a, I believe it was an executive order or something similar, which allowed the CIA to have more powers to launch cyber attacks, right? Because he's fighting the deep state, right, guys? Secret Trump order gives CIA more powers to launch cyber attacks. Keep telling yourselves he's fighting that deep state, guys. It says the Central Intelligence Agency has conducted a series of covert cyber operations against Iran and other targets since winning a secret victory in 2018 when President Trump signed what amounts to a sweeping authorization for such activities. This is according to a former U.S. official with direct knowledge of the matter. Now realize, guys, that this is exactly what they've been lying about, right? We've watched the continuous cyber attacks, the explosions in Lebanon, the explosions in Iran, right? These are they're telling you now that we're months past it. And we're saying, look, we did that. We conducted a series of covert cyber operations against Iran. And why is that legal? It's not. Oh, and guess what? And when those things exploded and civilians died, do we not care? Does the CIA not care? Well, obviously the CIA doesn't care. But you know what? Who obviously doesn't care is the Trump administration, or at the time before, the Obama administration. The allowance of these kind of entities to murder civilians in your name with your tax dollars and act like nothing's wrong and then accuse the governments that they're fighting of being the bad guys. And you know what? They may be as well. But the truth is, as an American, we need to be honest about what's happening here. The CIA conducting broad sweeping cyber attacks that are taking human life with no impotent, no, they're not responding, right? You can't even use the Bethlehem Doctrine. They don't even, it's not even preemptive self-defense. They're just overtly bombing and attacking these people. Now it says the secret authorization known as, and it's a presidential finding, different variations on the same, you know, it's a single person signing a piece of paper and making this happen, completely circumventing any illusion of democracy, a representative government that we might have. It gives the spy agency, the CIA, more freedom in both the kinds of operations it conducts and who it targets. I mean, at this point, we should be asking, if this happened in 2018, you know, who knows? Maybe the assassination of Soleimani wasn't even Trump's decision. Maybe he didn't even know what was happening until afterward and just owned it because he had to. I mean, remember, they did the MOAB, the largest non-nuclear bomb in Afghanistan. Trump didn't even know it was used until after it happened. That was openly reported by the Trump administration because he gave them this broad sweeping. Think about all the things he's done. Here we're looking at them giving the CIA broad authority to conduct massive cyber attacks without actually speaking to him first. We see this example here of them increasing the bombings incredibly. Right. And then we also just talked about the reality of, in the very beginning of his administration, allowing military on the ground to make their own decisions without checking in with the White House, which was the example we saw with the bomb in Afghanistan. So at what point are they actually making any decisions? Who's actually running the show? It's a good question. But the bottom line here, to go back to the main point in this article, is that in this case, it's the CIA, not Donald Trump, fighting that deep state, you know? It says the authorization gives that spy agency, the CIA, more freedom in both the kinds of operations it conducts and who it targets, undoing many restrictions that have been in place under prior administrations. The finding allows the CIA to more easily authorize its own covert cyber operations rather than requiring the agency to get approval from the White House. It's think about that when we're talking about the kind of repercussions that are coming from these actions. And you wonder why other places around the world see the U.S. government as a terrorist organization. Now, that's supposed to be contentious these days, but it's increasingly less contentious because they are doing things like that. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it for fighting for freedom. You can call it liberation, or you can call it what it is, illegal acts of terror, which is using violence to commit to achieve political ends. Simple, right? The moment that you allow the government themselves to bastardize what it means, well, of course, they're going to make it something other than what they're doing. The reality is the definition is simple. Terrorism is using violence to commit to achieve political ends, period. That's what it is. That's how it's defined. So when we're watching our government, or any government for that matter, going around and murdering people to achieve their political ends, that's called a terrorist act. But at this point, I mean, I think it's becoming so convoluted, it doesn't even matter anymore. The bottom line, it's a crime. That's what matters. What they're doing is a crime. And what they're doing here is hurting people in your name with your tax dollars, or very really allowing a rogue agency that has been shown to be wildly just disconnected from anything American, giving them broad sweeping agency to do whatever they want without approval from the White House. Does that sound like fighting the deep state, or does that sound like giving it a jump start? This directive, driven by the National Security Council and crafted by the CIA, focuses more broadly on a capability: covert actions in cyberspace. It says the CIA's new powers are not about hacking to collect intelligence. Instead, they open the way for the agency to launch offensive cyber operations with the aim of producing disruption. I mean, that's straight up saying that we're not even doing this in response. We're doing this to cause chaos. Right? You guys are the chaos. Right? That's the point. Like cutting off electricity, it says, or compromising an intelligence operation by dumping documents online. So they're actually telling you, like cutting off electricity. Oh, you mean like happened in Venezuela? You mean like happened in Libya? You mean like happened in every country they're involved in? Well, I think we know why now. It says, as well as destruction similar to the U.S.-Israeli 2009 Stuxnet attack, which, by the way, we know was exactly what we're talking about involving Israel, which destroyed centrifuges that Iran used to enrich uranium gas for its nuclear program. In reality, for its civilian nuclear program. They're building nuclear plants. That's what they're doing. They're light years away from any kind of nuclear bomb, as the IAEA just told us. So what they're doing is they're using this to justify the attacks on Iran with the foggy idea of nuclear stuff or nuclear prevention, when in reality, all they're doing is giving the deep state broad ability to use cyber attacks on anyone they want anywhere without White House approval. Sounds great, right? It says the finding has made it easier for the CIA to damage adversaries' critical infrastructure, such as petrochemical plants. That sound familiar? Another key change with the finding is it's lessened. Another key change with the finding is it lessened the evidentiary requirements that limited the CIA's ability to conduct covert cyber operations against entities like media organizations, charities, religious institutions, or businesses believed to be working on behalf of adversaries, foreign intelligence services. So they guess. Media organizations. So like us, for instance, or like anybody that they don't agree with. And let's pretend like we're going to, you know, just assume the CIA would only do this on the reality. So, you know, on a situation that's true and not just attack a media organization that's exposing one of their crimes and use this as the cover for that. Nah, the CIA would never do that, even though they've done it 100 times before. It's straight up telling you that they have the ability to attack media organizations and independent journalists because they think, or they argue, they're fighting on behalf of a foreign entity. And that's the excuse they use about all of us, when in reality, all we're doing is trying to find the truth that they're actively obfuscating. Very chilling. As well as individuals affiliated with these organizations, according to them. Cool. Because we can trust the CIA, right? It says, quote, before you would need years of singles and dozens of pages of intelligence that show this thing is a de facto arm of the government. Yeah, so that's called proof. Even then they lied about it, right? But Now, as long as you can show that it vaguely looks like the charity is working on behalf of that government, well, then you're good. Oh, cool. So you could potentially cyber attack and destroy a charity that actually isn't working on behalf of a foreign government just because you think it might kind of look like that. That's literally what it says. Well, I guess not literally, but that's actually what it says. How is that? That's obviously not legal. Do we even care about legalities anymore? No, we don't. Might is right. The age of Trump has made that abundantly clear. Because you're powerful, you can do what you want. And that means you're the good guy because you're powerful. That's what they're telling everybody. The CIA has wasted no time in exercising the new freedoms won under Trump. Since the finding was signed 2 years ago, the agency has carried out, get this, at least a dozen operations that were on its wish list, according to a former official. Quote, this has been a combination of destructive things. Stuff is on fire and exploding. Oh, and then left out of that is, you know, and civilians die. That's the truth. And also public dissemination of data. Leaking or things that look like leaking. That is so incredibly important. Things that look like leaking. Do you not see how that's happening constantly? That they'll leak things out to you, such as that Trump's going to be leaving Somalia, and that's really them just giving you disinformation through their channels? Or any number of examples. Meant to look like leaking is the concept that that's why they're attacking Assange. That's why they're attacking WikiLeaks, because they want to be WikiLeaks. They want to be that front, and maybe they actually are. I've considered that possibility from the very beginning. But by the way, that still doesn't matter in regard to what they're doing. I said this also from the beginning. Whether or not Assange is, whether or not the entire thing was a ploy, they're still using it the same way. We still need to stop what they're trying to do to Assange, regardless of whether it's real or not, because they're going to still use it for the same end. So all the people arguing that Assange is a shill for this or that, maybe, who cares at this point? It doesn't even matter. I don't think that. I really don't. But at the end of the day, whether he's a shill plant sitting there using them to do this, or he's a real person sitting there letting him do this, it still amounts to letting them do this. It doesn't change the outcome. So the point being is they obviously want to be that group that they want to pretend they're the leakers giving you new and fresh information, when in reality, they're in control and it's a limited hangout. It's meant to leak you things to get you thinking the way they want you to think. And that's what this actually says right here. People were doing, well, that's the first part it says, and this is what you need to see from this. This is a former CIA official, and he's telling you people were doing backflips in the hallway when this was signed. Why? Because it gave them carte blanche. They're out there. The CIA is already basically completely off the grid in regard to how we see them conducting things. Americans don't see what the CIA does until they tell us something. So we're talking about giving them the power, the broad sweeping power to do things even more so. Cyber attacks on country, and this is with authority. People were doing backflips in the hallways because they know this is unbelievable. And it says the involvement of U.S. intelligence agencies in hack and dump activities also raises uncomfortable comparisons for some former officials. It says our government is basically turning into WikiLeaks. Now, think about how crazy it is that they're arresting somebody and trying to put him in prison for the rest of his life, potentially put him to death for doing what they're now turning themselves into. Talk about hypocrisy. I mean, these people are dripping with hypocrisy. Because it's not about not doing these things. It's about them having control over these things. And that's supposed to be honorable, apparently. Because they want you to think, well, we're the good guys then, right? And if we're the good guys, well, then whatever we do has to be a good thing, right? That's the childish, reduced idea that they want everybody to think. But it becomes kind of difficult to think that when you see that these actions result in the death of hundreds of thousands, millions of people around the world just since the war of terror was started. You know, that thing that actually did the opposite of what they said they were trying to do, because I think that's exactly what they were trying to do, create the very excuse all around the world they would then use to invade these countries. At the end of the day, whether you think so or not, clearly they did the opposite. Show me the countries that they've liberated. I'd love to see you point those out. Iraq, destroyed. Government after government, chaos, everything. The people there want the U.S. government to leave. Afghanistan is just very recently, it's probably slightly different now, but months ago, more people were dying, civilians per day, than ever in the history of that war. Cool. That's liberation. Okay, what about Syria? Still burning wheat fields and stealing oil. People could barely feed themselves and they're freezing during the winter. Cool. Liberation. Well, that one, they didn't get to finish the liberation. How about Libya? where they're open slave markets, and now there's still open conflict about the thing that 10, 20 years ago, liberation. And realize that after they so-called liberated it from Gaddafi, that's when it fell into chaos and people started selling open slaves, and they just took off. That's liberation. Right? Bolivia is now under a military coup leadership. Liberation after they were in an actual representative democracy. I mean, it just never ends. This is what they're actually doing. And the point is that you need to have the courage to actually stand up and acknowledge that's happening in the face of people trying to call you un-American or anti-Semitic or any kind of term that they're broadly applying to anybody just simply trying to tell you the truth. Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, that there's not anti-Semitic people that are actually saying racist things or people that actually hate this country. Both of those things exist. The point is that people are using them broadly to cover people within that argument that aren't actually saying what they're accusing you of saying. The point is you need to think for yourself, ladies and gentlemen, and it's never been more important in the history of this country, in the history of the world, to actually take time to think for yourself. And you might just realize how easy it is if you can just pull yourself out of the control matrix that we're in, right? The comforting suffocation of the constant belittling and constant pat on the head of the mommy nanny government. The only way we're actually going to see something different is if we have the courage to fight for it. Now is the time. So please help me and please help spread this information. Thank you so much for being here today. As always, always inspired by everybody here and the conversations that you're having. So please help me get this information out with anybody, everybody, people you hate, people you love alike. Now is the time. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Today, the job of building this nation geographically is completed. There are no new frontiers within our borders. So, to what new horizons can we look now? Where are tomorrow's opportunities? What's ahead for you, for your children? The frontiers of the future are not on any map. They are in the test tubes and laboratories of the great industries.
The Jacobardi case was one of the great judicial moments in world history, and the public was totally unaware it was actually happening as the process was being engaged. General Electric and Professor Jacobardi went to the patent office with a little microbe that eats up oil spills. They said they had modified this microbe in the laboratory, and therefore it was an invention. The patent office, the U.S. government, took a look at this, quote, invention, and they said, no way. The patent statutes don't cover living things. This is not an invention. Turned down. Then General Electric and Dr. Jacobardi appealed to the U.S. Customs Court of Appeal. And to everyone's surprise, by a 3-2 decision, they overrode the patent office. We bring good things to life. And they said, this microbe looks more like a detergent or a reagent than a horse or a honeybee. I laughed because they didn't understand basic biology. It looked like a chemical to them. Had it had an antenna or eyes or wings or legs, it would never have crossed their table and been patented. Then the patent office appealed. And what the public should realize now is the patent office was very clear that you can't patent life. My organization provided the main amicus curiae brief. If you allow the patent on this microbe, we argued, it means that without any congressional guidance or public discussion, corporations will own the blueprints of life. When they made the decision, we lost by 5-4, and Chief Justice Warren Burger said, sure, some of these are big issues, but we think this is a small decision. 7 years later, the U.S. Patent Office issued a one-sentence decree. You can patent anything in the world that's alive except a full-birth human being.